I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. So you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Wow, I survived that thing. Hey everybody, good morning, I'm Brian Hammer Jackson. You're listening to Brian Hammer Jackson. It's me, Brian Hammer Jackson. You're listening to me. It's April 30th, at the end of the month. We had a great show yesterday. We had no guests, but we had a great conversation. Welcome to Brian Hammer Jackson Show, as known as the NBA, which stands for No Black Attitudes. Yeah, right. Good morning, Kelly. Well, Kelly's not here. Good morning, people. Well, I think Robbie was. Let's see. 985. Good morning. This Johnny?
This is Johnny right here.
Are both you guys together?
We are. No, we're not, but we're on the same show.
I don't know.
We're spiritually together.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's good to have you. Good to hear that voice, Johnny. Let me just open the show with everybody. Good morning, Rock and Robbie. Johnny Rock is here, everybody. Easy.
All
the
can you
girls
dig it, baby?
Are taking off their time. I can dig it. Look at you. Wow. Ellen, good morning. Kelly's on her way in. Good morning.
Hey. Hey, everybody.
Johnny Rock's here. Johnny,
hey, Johnny.
Rock's
good morning.
Here. You know Johnny Rock.
Yes, I do.
Hello, Ellen.
Hey.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yes. Ellen's still taking off her panties and giving you her number. Good
Seriously?
Morning.
Really? Are we doing this?
Yeah.
Oh, he always does that.
Yeah, he always does that. Yeah, no, but the thing is, he's always got to pick on me.
I got Robbie here, so take it easy. Calm down. Calm down. All right, everybody. Johnny's here. He's our special guest. We have a lot of things going on. Kelly's on her way. We're talking about the IWMAs. What that means is for the independent white people. Independent World Music Awards.
Oh my God!
I got to get off this clipper thing. Independent World Music Awards, everybody. I'm going to tell you something. Where's the applause on that sucker? We are going to change the world with Johnny Rock. I'm telling you.
Let's do it.
That's right. We're going deep, deep, deep in the South. Deep in the South. So deep that people still think like one of those washtubs is a musical instrument in a jug. It's a band in the Deep South.
Oh,
but it is.
and Robbie still cooks squirrels for breakfast. That's how deep it is.
Squirrel gravy and biscuits.
Ew.
Love them vittles.
And you know, a washing machine doubles real good for icing down beer.
It really does. It really does.
Does it
turn off the cycle?
Wow. I'm going to have to learn the ways of you people if I go into another country. I hope I have to get my passport.
You people?
But,
oh, my God. You sound like we're in a third world country.
Well, come on. Johnny could tell me there are some places in the Deep South that may look and act like third world countries. Let's be honest.
Oh, that would be the West Bank.
Oh, okay.
The West Bank. No, I told him, Johnny, it would be Kennebra.
Okay, yeah, Canada, that passes. That's where I grew up.
Oh,
oh my God. I'm in trouble. Well,
not that I ever grew up, but.
Yeah, okay, yeah, who said you grew up, right?
Right.
Save me from the Southerners. I have a fear of going down south, but I'm going to do it because Johnny Rock is appearing. That's the only reason I'm going. The IWMAs, the Independent World Music Award. If you don't know what that is, it's because you suck. You should know what that means. The best of the best musicians are going to be appearing there. It's going to be the Hard Rock Cafe. We know it's Hard Rock because let me tell you how good it is. Robbie's already partying there, and we're not holding the event to another 5 months. That's how good it is. So, oh, thank you. So, I want you to clear your schedule September 21st. That's a Sunday. You know, say hello to Jesus and come party with us. And remember, he died for your sins, so you're allowed to drink and party with us. So, once you're there, we're going to have name bands there. We got Johnny Rock is going to freaking MC, man. I'm going to tell you something. Man, if there's an event that you need to go to, when Johnny MCs this, all the ladies are going to be throwing their panties on the stage, so we're going to be sitting around a bunch of ladies with no underwear. It's a win-win. We're going to have known bands there. Just party. Just watch Robbie. Robbie will be the show. Just trust me. She'll go on stage. She'll be singing and things. It's just going to be a sight to see. At the IWMAs, which is the Independent World Music Awards, first time ever honoring the professional independent artist. Get your music out there. We have special guests coming on. We're connected with one of my favorite vocalists and keyboardists, Mr. Larry Russ with Iron Butterfly. What year was he with them, Robbie?
1999 to 2005.
And that was their best year. So with a little coaxing. Yeah. With a little coaxing, I might get up and do a duet with him if you guys are a little lucky, you know what I mean? He always asks me, oh, Larry, no. But anyway, it's going to be great. And tickets will go on sale next week after Robbie tells us it's a go. Robbie's in our negotiation, and let's open up the mic to Robbie right now. Robbie, how are we doing with our negotiations?
We're doing really good. This is live from the Hard Rock, by the way. I'm on the ninth floor looking over at the Mississippi Sound. Yes, I'm here in negotiations, and it's going strong. That's all I can say right now. I've got a meeting at 1 o'clock with my girl, and we're going to see what happens.
Wow. Look at that, yeah. Johnny. Johnny, we're going to – hey, can we get Johnny's name on the marquee? Can we get mine and Johnny's name on the marquee? Can I go into the negotiations, Robbie?
You guys are pushing it, but I'll ask.
All right.
That would be awesome. And what better venue than the Hard Rock Cafe?
The Hard Rock Casino. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, the venue down is incredible. It's got a big, huge room with a big, giant screen in the middle behind the stage, two screens on each other side. It seats like 1,500 people theater style. It has a big, huge open bar. And then upstairs is a VIP section that is an incredible lounge called the Record Company. It is just so cool. And then you can walk outdoors to the balcony where it seats another 230 people. So it's really, really cool.
That's the main room, right, Robbie?
Yeah, the main event room. Yeah.
Yeah,
live.
Yeah. I was there for New Year's Eve. It's a beautiful room. I was booked there for New Year's Eve for their New Year's Eve bash, and I had the honor, or however you want to put it, I was. It was what's his name? The British movie, Austin Powers. It was Austin Powers theme New Year's Eve party, and I was Fat Bastard. So I had to walk around and have a good time as Fat Bastard. It was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a great room. It's going to be perfect for our venue, and we are going to have the epic party of the century. I'm telling you, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
How about we're going to have an after party, so make sure you get the VIP tickets, because if you don't get them, you won't see me throw up.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have a silent auction and raffle to donate proceeds to our women's and children's abuse shelters locally. We're going to pick one from from New Orleans and one from Mississippi. And we're going to have a silent auction and raffle. And then we're going to have a before VIP party with a buffet and free drinks before the concert. Then we're going to have the big awards ceremony and concert. And then we're going to have an epic after party upstairs in the VIP section. So it's just going to be incredible. It's going to be a fun-filled day.
Now, Robbie, do they have to buy a VIP ticket for them to actually enjoy the after party with us? I mean, that's what the perks with the VIP.
Yeah, that's the VIP perks, yes. And those tickets go on sale, and you need to get those early because they're going to go quick. I mean, with partying with the bands and the big wigs upstairs in the VIP room is just awesome.
I was hearing Johnny Rock in my ear. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Robbie.
It'll be champagne flowing and just lots of fun.
Champagne? Well, better cut down on the cost. Okay. Cut cost.
Hey, that's not
some
your worry. Your worry is to have fun.
We're in the South. Some of us will drink champagne. Some of us will drink from the still. You know, we cut the cost. These guys from the South. You guys get the moonshine. I don't want to go in the South. You know how I fear the South. But, yeah, we have a great after party, and I'm part of the after party. I'm going to open up the lines. My God, the whole board is lit up. Johnny, you brought the peoples. Jim, I'm coming right to you. yeah, we're going to have fun at the after party. Make sure you go there, because after the show, you get to go backstage, and it's like a backstage pass, and you see us drink, and you see you know, Kelly drink and get drunk. Ellen gets drunk and she'll slide down the pole. And there's going to be a lot of fun going on.
Oh,
and I don't know if you know, but I don't drink anymore myself.
Do you drink any less?
I don't drink any less, though. Yeah. You got me. You got me.
Johnny will not be drinking, but he'll be in charge of, you know, doing the video so it can embarrass us all and get some blackmail money. So
yeah, I'll just have one drink, but it'll be one of those real big ones. You know, that comes in a gallon jug.
Yeah, the one that lasts all night long, right?
Yeah, with the three X's on the jug.
Yeah.
Well, Robbie, you're gonna have to get a keg and just mark Johnny. That'll be
there. You go.
That'll work.
I'll have some. We have somebody in here. I hate keeping people waiting on hold. I don't know what's going on. Jim Carnes, I'm coming to you, buddy. Good morning. Live on Brian Jackson. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thank you for coming on the show. Go ahead.
Johnny Rock's got a thing, huh?
Hi, Jim.
Now, Jim, do you know Johnny?
Well, I mean, I communicate with him. I don't know that I know him.
Jim,
I see his name all over the place. Huh?
Yeah, Jim Carnes. This is Robbie. Jim Carnes is an L.A. actor. He is with La Canola as well. So he knows everybody by through Facebook.
Wow. Well, Jim, let me ask you something. A little bit that you know of Johnny. Would you think by, you know, typing to him, that crime, his kind of personality, whatever crime it's.
Okay, you're breaking up there. I can't understand you.
I didn't understand you.
I didn't catch it
either. I'm using this. Is it breaking too much?
Yeah, you're cutting out.
Wow, we have.
Yeah, that's too much. Plus, you sound like you're in a tunnel.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, I'm going to switch the phone because this headset is breaking up. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Kelly, I'm going to X out. Continuing. Okay. So the show doesn't. Okay.
Okay.
So, Robbie, if you can hear the event, tell the Hard Rock Cafe, everything that's going on.
Yes, it's the Hard Rock Casino. The Hard Rock Cafe is a restaurant. We will be having this at the Hard Rock Casino in Biloxi. Hopefully, that's what I'm working on today, the next 3 days. And September on the 21st. Now, the Hard Rock has a big, huge casino. It's got the venue lounges. It's got restaurants. It's got gift shops. It's got a swimming pool that has speakers underwater. So when you're swimming underwater, you can still hear music. And all through the whole place, even in the elevators, you've got rock and roll playing. In the hallways, you've got memorabilia everywhere, in every hall, in the rooms. It's just incredible. And I'm excited to be able to share it with all of our listeners, because it's an incredible thing, venue to come to and have a great time.
And they also have a beauty shop and a spa, correct?
Yeah,
so that people can get ready before the party?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, they've got a great salon area, spa treatments and hair, whatever you need done before the party. But the party is going to be great. It's going to be red carpet style, and we are just going to have a blast.
It sounds like fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to the Hard Rock Casino. It's really, really nice.
What time's your meeting today, Robbie?
I have a meeting at 1 o'clock with her.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is that better?
There you go.
Okay. I'm sorry, Robbie. Go ahead. The Hard Rock Casino. I'm listening. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to come back at 6 to see her, but she had to leave. So I called her this morning, and I'm going to meet her at 1 o'clock. So see what she thinks about what we sent her and get this show on the road.
Well, either way, we know the deal that you make. Preferably, it's the deal that you're working on. But if worst comes to worst, we committed to it, and I don't think there'll be a problem. So I'm going to have you make the decision. Should we commit to it?
I
know that.
Commit to it.
Okay. We'll commit to it. Okay. Cool. Then. Robbie will handle the negotiation and see if we can get a better deal. But either way, we're going to the Hard Rock Casino, September 21st.
Yes.
We have it the whole day. The show, Bobby, why do I keep calling you Bobby? Robbie, when does the IWMA Award start?
At 3 p.m. we will start.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have, you know, Johnny Rock, stand-up comedian, will be
mm-hmm.
hosting the silent auction and the raffle, and we're going to have, so the party really starts at 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really think the party starts Saturday. Everybody should come for the whole weekend, because we are going to be partying all weekend.
Well, yeah, we are. We are. And remember, it's
we'll
a casino.
We'll be there Saturday and Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah, I will be there.
Monday, we could have that's what we could do. I just thought of it. Monday morning after, we could have our breakfast. Because we still have the room Monday morning. We could have the breakfast the next morning there. That would be fun. Everybody that from the party that stayed over.
Hmm. Okay.
It's a thought.
It is a thought. I'm just thinking I'm going to be wasted. I'm not lying. I'm going to get there Friday. I am. I'm going to get there Friday, and I'm hoping, well, Robbie will probably still be at the Hard Rock. She probably didn't leave yet. She will
I'm not going to live all week.
Exactly. That's
week.
What I'm saying. I said, Robbie, it's been 5 months. Yeah. What a party.
And I'm Brian's
bodyguard. Are you really
going to have an appointment? I'm Brian's bodyguard.
Are you really going to be there, Brian?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I will be there. I'm committed.
Awesome.
In fact, I'm gonna be there probably Thursday because Ellen booked me on a radio show, right, Ellen?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'll be there Thursday. I'm going. Go ahead.
We really haven't said much about what the IWMAs are. You know, on the flyer, we suggested we need to put about what really started all this about the independent music artists signing up for a contest. The winner will be picked to come play here. We're going to pick the winners on stage. The top 7 is going to come play. So, I mean, it's really going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, here's how it started. First of all, thank you, Robbie. Yeah, let's go from the beginning. How we conceived of this is because we go way back. There's a lot of independent artists, a lot of independent artists who are very talented. Johnny Rock, I don't know if I can call him independent. Is that my ear that's squeaking? I'm
not
sorry,
me.
Guys. Blog talk. I'm just getting thrown off.
Sounds like somebody's on speakerphone.
Okay, so bottom line, what happens is this, is that we started this because there's a lot of independent artists who are very talented. I cannot really tell, really put Johnny into the independent artist because he's so good and his credits are so fantastic. I saw his reel. And I guess you would call it, if he does independent work, then he's an independent artist. But people like Johnny, who are one foot in mainstream, one foot still in independent, and it's hard for them to get recognized. And so someone said, you know, what about musicians? And I said, okay. And I don't know much about music. So basically it started off as getting these independent artists, musicians now, and we're going to go into film later, a chance to be recognized, a chance for them to get to monetize their songs because they work so hard. So it took us about a year to figure out how we can do it. And so we came up with Tip Forward. And Tip Forward is a program where, and we searched this, Kelly and I searched this, and so did Ellen. We looked everywhere, and every program that has musicians on it, they tend to take money from them and give them a commission. And I said, that's not right. That's their music, including Reverb Nation. I'm against Reverb Nation. It's like, sure, promote us, and we'll give you 40%, and we'll give you 50%. I said, that's bullshit. So we came up with Tip Forward that we put the money into the musicians' hands, meaning they have their PayPal account. If you like them, tip them. It goes right to the musician. Musicians, we have our app to take them globally, that kind of thing. Well, the problem is that a lot of you guys suck. So we can't take all of you. So we said, you know, we got a reputation. We can't hang around sucky people. So we got judges and say, you know, I'm not that good. You guys are in the music industry, and we got great judges in the music industry. So when you send us your music, the judges will say, you know, that's good. Let's pass them on. No, that guy sucked. Get rid of him. And then what happens is you're in a contest now. And basically the winner of the contest, you go forward and you get to appear in the IWMA, which is the first Independent World Music Award. Basically, you're battling, and you're appearing there, and you'll be the winner.
Yeah, basically, Battle of the Bands. And I think we should do the Lucky Seven. The top seven with the most votes will come and play, and I think we'll announce the winner on the stage.
Exactly. And then by chance and by honor, thanks to Larry Russ is whose client, Kelly? Is it Lindis or Tracy? I'm trying to remember.
Larry's independent.
But Linda introduced us to Larry Russ. Am I correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, Linda, thank you so much. Linda Albu introduced us to Larry Rust, who is the keyboardist and vocalist of Iron Butterfly in the year 1999 to 2000-something, Robbie?
2005.
2005. Now, Larry has a campaign called Musicians Against Abuse. And he came on the show. We loved his campaign. It's about bring more awareness to human trafficking and also help the people in the shelters, the children and the women. And we said, you know, we can work together on this. And Larry liked us. And so hopefully, and Robbie's really heavy into this, because she can probably explain more, but Larry lent his name to us. I think he's going to be there. It's a good cause with the IWMAs, the Independent World Music Awards, because we're going to raise money. I'm going to get there Thursday. I'm going to visit the shelters. I'm going to talk to the directors of the shelters, let them know what we're doing. And Robbie thought of a fantastic idea. Let's do help me out, Robbie. I want to call it rubbish sale. Let's do sell items.
Auction.
To help raise money. She put us even more. Let's raise money to help, you know, these charities, which is from the bottom of her heart, which is fantastic. So now it's taking a whole new life on its own. And that's it. And then Robbie goes, I got a great guy who could do this. I go, who? Johnny Rock. I go, Johnny Rock. Johnny, wasn't that pervert who got busted? No, no, not him. That's Johnny Guitar Watson. Oh. Johnny Rock. And then that's when Ellen screamed, Johnny Rock. And it goes, and then I remember Johnny. Johnny used to come on the show about a year ago. I remember that voice. And I go, he is a talented guy. And Robbie sent me his reel, his acting reel. I thought it was great. And then we are transparent. And I said, I'm only worried about this because our demographic is 18 to 48. And we're going to get a lot of rappers in there competing, bads. I was worried that can Johnny hit our demographic? To tell you the truth, I'm out of our demographic. But anyway, I mean, you know, I'm on the edge. I'm right there, but I'm hanging on with my fingertips. And then Robbie says, let me send you some of his work. And I go, okay. And I laugh my ass off. And I saw his reel. And I go, God, this guy can really act. And then I said, fuck it. Get me Johnny. And so now Johnny is here, and he was gracious enough to participate with us. And, wow, our whole board is lighting up. I turn my back, and I got about 20 people on this board. Johnny, they're Brian, crashing the boards.
And also, Brian, Johnny has a child awareness abuse going on right now in New Orleans. It's getting very – it's snowballing effect, basically, too. So,
oh, cool.
Johnny Rock is involved in that, too. Why don't you tell us something about that, Johnny?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, Brian, when Robbie you know, first approached me with this, as soon as she told me that it was to benefit and to help spread awareness about abuse and human trafficking and everything, it just hit me right in the heart that it was happening right now at this time, because so much has happened in the last 2 months with me, a lot of which I'm unable to discuss details because there's an ongoing case. But
sure.
It turns out that I am a survivor of childhood abuse in just about every form that is imaginable. I had suppressed memories from my childhood that I didn't remember. In fact, I still don't recall fourth or fifth grade. I don't remember any of my teachers. I don't remember any of my classmates. I know what school I went to only because that's just knowledge. I know what school I went to. But I don't remember anything. I mean, I found that very odd that I don't remember any of my school, my teachers or anything like that. You know, most people remember who their favorite teacher was, things like that. My stepfather was accused of molesting his great-grandchildren recently. And when I had heard that that happened, of course, it angered me because in 1972, my little sister had came forward and had made some accusations, and then my older sister did the same thing. Nothing was done back then. Nobody believed them. Just basically nothing was done. It just got brushed under the table. Well, since this recent accusations came out, and I had to go to the police station and share my memories of what it was like growing up in that house. And, again, I had suppressed memories that I did not know I had. Back in the day, I didn't support my sister because I didn't remember anything. And, you know, that angered her. And she was like, Johnny, how could you not remember this? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just saying I don't remember this. Well, when I went to the police station and started sharing my memories, it was like reading a book. I didn't know what was on the next page, but when I flipped the page, all the words were there, and it just all came out. And the detective asked me when I finished. He said, "Do you know how long you've been talking?" I said, "About 20 minutes." He said, "You've been talking for an hour and a half." I'm like, "Wow!" And I was like, "How could I not remember these things? I mean, horrendous, horrible things." And he said, "It's common." He said, "It happens all the time. Children just automatically block these things out." And so now that I remember these things, it makes me realize how it affects us throughout our lives, how it's, you know, how we treat other people and how we how we, you know, relationships. We, you know, failed relationships, drug and alcohol abuse, just all kind of different effects it has in our lives. Well, once you speak up, it's such a healing effect. It's just like a ton of bricks is just off your chest, and it's a healing effect. And once I spoke up, the response that I got was unimaginable. The private messages on Facebook from people that have never spoken before, that have gone through the same thing, and they were telling me for the first time. And I dealt with it. It was hard to deal with, but I knew that what I was doing was right. And so many people are coming forward now, and I can't stop now. It's you know, it's one of those things where you can't turn back now. I've begun production on a documentary called I'm a Survivor, and we have people from all over the United States that are coming forward and speaking up, and we're going to make a change. And I'm happy and blessed that I've been asked to MC this event, because I know it's for a good cause, and it's going to do good things for a lot of people.
Well, yeah. Johnny, you're not alone. You're not alone,
buddy.
I know I'm not. It happens so frequently. I mean, the stats are incredible. And, Johnny, I love your cause, and hopefully I can meet you before the show. Maybe we could visit some of these abuse, shelters for
absolutely,
you know, and meet with, and that's what I want to do. That's why I'm going to get there early. I'm hoping to get there Thursday, because I do want to meet with some of these directors and shelters, and let's put some of this money into your benefit too, Johnny. I mean, let's do something. Let's change the world. I mean, one kid can change the world. That kid that we help may cure cancer 10 years from now. Who knows? But
absolutely.
I'm sorry you went through it, my friend, but I'm glad you're here to talk about it, and I'm glad you went through it, because you are a model saying, I know what you went through. Hey, you can survive. It's not the end of the world. And you're a role model. You're a role model for this.
Yeah.
Anybody who survives that, and I'm talking about a lot of people out there who survive it and still living productive lives and dealing with this, this secret. And they're heroes. That's a hero to me. You know, the most devastating thing that happened to you as a child, and you're still functioning as an adult, and you still have the morals and the caring and the humanity to help others, that's a hero. That's not a guy who was whipped or crushed or you know what I'm saying. I don't want to go on, but you
know
what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, the word hero keeps coming up, and I don't feel like a hero in any shape, form, or manner. I feel like if I had not stepped forward, and if I had not stepped, you know, spoke up and spoke out, then I would not be able to sleep with myself. I would not be able to sleep. I would not be able to live with myself by not doing something. My older sister died and went to her grave as a victim. She wasn't a survivor, because she never got to, you know, she never saw justice done. She died being accused as a liar. Nobody believed her. You know, my family's been so broken over this. My little sister moved away. Haven't seen her in 25 years. Haven't heard her voice. And, of course, you know, I was at my sister's bedside, you know, just hours before she passed. And we talked together alone. And I do believe that she visited me just the day that I went to the police department. That night at my apartment, I felt her presence, and I felt that she had came to tell me, you know, thank you, and that everything was going to be all right now, and it will be. Everything's going to be okay.
You're damn right. And to
me, we need to have a family reunion. Get your sister here for the party that you haven't seen. I'll reach
out.
Yeah,
we got to get her drunk, Johnny. We'll get her drunk. Your dad, a hero is someone who impacts someone's life, and that's who I consider a hero. All right, our guest is here. Johnny, how long do I have you?
I'm good. What's today?
Today
Wednesday.
is Wednesday.
I'm good till Friday.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Let me plug my phone into the charger so it don't die.
Okay, buddy. I understand because our guest is here, but I do want to talk about you. I'm going to play your clip. He's on a really tight schedule, and if you don't mind to have him come forward a little bit. Because, in fact, I'll make you my host today. All right. Thank you, Johnny. The great Johnny Rock, I'm telling you, man. You know, Kelly and Robbie, you should get together, see if we can get a Survivor T-shirt together for this cause, because we're trying to do something very nice, and maybe we can get people wearing T-shirts to bring awareness to what's going on. We'll talk about it, huh?
Yeah, well, since you mentioned that, I do have T-shirts now to help raise money for the documentary film, I'm a Survivor. It's I Stand With Johnny Rock shirts. And then on the back it says, Speak Up, Speak Out, Stop Child Abuse.
I love it.
We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. I love it, though. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny's going to be with us, so hold on, you Johnny Rock fans. He's not leaving. He has not left the building. All right, here we go. We got to start our show, Sex Lives. Sex and Lies. So far, I see nothing wrong. And Rosen Gates with author Ken O'Kelly. I'm going to try to pronounce your name. Alex Opolis. You'll correct me. I'm sorry, Alex. Kelly, can you read the board, please? And let's start the show. Kelly? All right. Here we go. I'll read it. Today on Brian and Hammer Jackson Show, Johnny Rock, actor, comedian, voiceover artist, DJ, will be visiting to talk about the IWMAs. Ken, Alex Opolis. Ken is a Toronto-based author who is presenting some fascinating work that has been getting positive attention. He is represented by one of my favorite publicists, Tracy Lamore. Ken expects Kelly, you put this up here. Ken expects his most recent story will be made into a film or TV shortly, and is open to creative discussion with filmmakers. Is it Anima Libera? Book one, Sex, Lies, and Rosen Gates, an occult magician. That's magician. Or is it, Kelly, you're writing, magician struggles to discover an identity of his own in a city that has none. A series of shorts set in Ontario where a man damned by his own hand, I better read that completely, woo, where a man damned by his own hand struggles to find redemption. Because that one could have, we had to change the ratings if it was just he was damned by his own hand. Join us live, and here we are. Let's see, Showtime News, blah, blah, blah. Okay, sponsored by Max Ivy, Midway Marketplace, helping people buy, sell, and trade new and used amusement, concessions, and confection equipment, offering free appraisals. That's Max Ivy, Tip Forward, offering musicians from around the world, and that is true because they're on our app, the opportunity to control their own destiny in the music industry. Currently featuring on Tip Forward is GMO, Moore, lead guitarist with Earth, Wind, and Fire, and singer-songwriter Parker. They have their song featured with us right now on Tip 4 called Come On Home. All right, everybody, we have our guests here, and everybody dropped. Wow. Ellen, you're here with me right now? Okay, Ellen must have dropped. Kelly just came in here. I hate blog talk. Kelly, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here. You didn't hear me before talking.
No.
I'm not
all
sure
right.
What was
we'll
going
be right
on.
Back with our guest. And he's a good one. Ken, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
I did that for you, Kelly. She's such a fan of Craig Ferguson.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And our special host will be Secretariat, the horse on Craig Ferguson's show. Right, Secretariat. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Ken, I butchered your name. Ken Alexopoulos. Welcome to the show, Ken. And please pronounce your name correctly. Bob Cox is really screwing up. Hi, Ken. How are you?
I can't complain. I actually woke up about half an hour ago, so you're lucky.
Ken, welcome to the show. You're here with Johnny Rock and Kelly Corbin and Ellen, and we have Jesse. Sex lies. Tell me about sex and lies, Ken.
Well, the entire premise of the story is essentially, it starts off, I don't know, do you know anything about the Golden Dawn?
No, no. The Golden Dawn, isn't that an X-rated movie?
It might be, actually. I wouldn't know.
Oh.
I haven't done that much
oh,
research.
Oh, the Dawn,
the
D-A-W-N, not the deal. Sorry, Robbie, it's not the Dawn, it's Dawn. I'm sorry, it's Robbie. No, I
okay.
don't, Ken. It's okay, Robbie. She's still partying at the Hard Rock. No, talk to me about the Golden Dawn.
Well, it was basically an offshoot of the Freemasons back in the day. It was started off by Aleister Crowley, who decided to adapt dilemma into a metaphysical practice.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Sex, Lies, and Rosengates revolves around the whole Rosicrucian movement. And it involves basically just a bunch of bullshit that happens over in Toronto. I can swear here, right?
You just did. We quit now.
Okay.
Thank you. You opened up the floodgate. Okay, everybody, get a swear word. No, I'm only kidding. Go
okay.
ahead.
This, I apologize.
No, 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 no. We swear on the show all the time. We're internet, so we can do anything we want.
Okay, just making sure. Otherwise, this entire interview is just going to be a series of blanks, but hey, whatever.
No, continue, sir. We can swear here.
Well, the premise behind the story is essentially there are so many small cults and small offshoots of minor religions out there. And Sex, Lies, and Rosengates basically encompasses that, and it mainly focuses on one particular offshoot of a cult, which is attempting to basically skew the minds of anybody who joins it for personal gain. And then you have this one guy, Rick, he doesn't have a face. I made it completely intentional in the story not to give him any identity at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just him trying to figure things out while he basically listens to voices. So it's never really clear as to whether or not he's schizophrenic.
Okay. Okay.
I confuse myself half the time.
No. I follow you completely. It sounds interesting. And you mentioned it's a book right now. Is the book out, Ken? Or?
Oh, the book's not even done.
Okay, the book's not even done. But did you start making shorts already? Because it's a series of shorts that I have here that's set in Ontario. So is all this in the process?
It is in the process. The first
okay.
story, Sex, Lies, and Rosengates, is done.
Oh, okay.
And I'm building off of that.
Oh, okay.
Except the first one got such positive reception that I decided, you know what, it makes more sense to kind of go through with it now rather than later, because if I sign up with a publisher, what will end up happening is I'll be stuck at their whim, and I might
right.
not be able to choose where to go.
Oh, I see. Now, okay, how long did it take you to complete this book?
About a month.
A month? God, you're a fast
yeah.
writer. And apparently you don't have a publisher, so it's not on Amazon or anything right now because you're still deciding where to go with it. Am I correct, Ken?
Yes.
Okay. My first thing is, Kent, what made you write a book about this? That would be my first question. I mean, if everything that you can write a book about, this is a particular subject that must be close to your heart. So tell me about the conception of, you know what, I think I'm going to sit down and put paper, or pen to paper. So how did you do this?
I actually just woke up one day and got pissed off. Be totally honest with you. I just got mad. I know that that's a strange thing to say, but I'm a very negative person at heart, all right?
Okay.
Like, I don't hide that. And the rest of the planet, for some reason, seems to be so enamored with the concept of positivity that they completely deny anything remotely negative. And for me, it's kind of like, are you trying to say that I'm less of a human being due to the fact that I actually recognize things are wrong? So I started writing.
So therapy did not really help.
Therapy rarely helps, no. Well, for me anyway.
Well, you know what? I can relate. Kent, I can relate to you because the reason I did this show is because I woke up pissed off. I mean, seriously, I can relate to you. That's not a joke, and Kelly will know it. And you know, I'm a pissed off dude. I'm going to talk about your book, but I got to ask you something because I love negative people because they're honest and they're not politically correct, and it gives me a chance to talk to somebody that I can relate to. How do you feel about this NBA thing with the Clippers and things like this? This is a big controversy here. You're a negative person. How do you really feel what's going on?
Well, you're expecting an honest answer, right?
Yes.
Okay. He's an old white dude. He is an old-fashioned white dude who's clearly a little racist. This isn't new.
See, this is why I like you, Ken.
Sorry,
you get... Yeah, don't hold back.
Oh, it's the truth. He's an old-fashioned white guy. He feels uncomfortable around members that don't look like him. So, yeah, he's racist. What do you want from him? I'm not saying he's right, but that's what it is. Like, it'd be different if Barack Obama decided to sit there and have a State of the Union and say, oh, white people are the devil. Fine. Yeah, that's new.
I totally agree. You know, he's 80 years old, and he was raised that way. On my age group, in the 50s, I was raised that way, but I didn't think it was right when I was 4 years old and wanted to play with the little black girl. And mother said, no, you can't do that. So, you know, actually, I'm the first generation reaching out to stop racism. Now, our children are not racist. So, you know, it will eventually go away when all the old people are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's also the other side of it, too. I mean, the NBA is what, like 80% not Caucasian?
Mm-hmm.
At least. So, really, mm-hmm. does his opinion or his words really factor into anything?
You're speaking to the choir. And Ken, and here's where my thoughts is. Does he have the right to be a racist, Ken?
I don't know if anybody has the right to be a racist, but if that's his opinion, that's just his opinion.
Well, that's what I mean. But isn't he entitled to his opinion in America? Whether you like Chinese food, whether you don't like same-sex marriage, whether you don't like abortion, whether you don't like smoking marijuana, isn't it your opinion that you're allowed to express and not be condemned and be, you know, tortured?
Well, that's the beauty of free speech, though.
Exactly.
Like, the beauty of free speech is that you're allowed to speak your mind, but at the same point in time, everybody else has the freedom to tell you that you're wrong.
Right. Exactly. Now, Ken, how do you feel about the black community getting upset, wanting to take his business away, banning him from going to a sporting event because he mentioned he doesn't want to be around black people? That's all he did.
Oh, that's an odd question, but... here's how I feel about it. But taking away his business is essentially the same thing as him saying black people can't go to the game. It's not going to solve anything. But at the same point in time, yeah, I'd be pissed off too. If somebody just like woke up one day and said that all Greeks are bastards, yeah, you can bet that you'd have a lot of Greeks on that person's ass. It's the same thing.
Well, that's kind of irony, Greeks on someone's ass. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm just a pervert.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, okay. Just me. But that's my thing. What happened with Paula Deen? When he thought it was a fair question when they said, have you ever used the N-word in your life? Now, this woman's in the South. You guys are brought up saying N-word before you say Papa and Mama. It's kind of – and then you take away her business.
How do you feel about that, Ken?
Paula, like, oh, God. I actually forgot about the Paula Deen thing until you brought it up. I feel that we live in a world right now where anything that's remotely offensive needs to be eradicated immediately.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem with our society. We don't want to admit,
like,
hey,
socialism.
Some people are just like that.
Yeah. You know, and yes, Robbie, I heard you. What did you say, Robbie?
I said it's a form of socialism.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I'm black, and I was brought up, I mean, every day, you know, when a cop stops me or whatever, and he profiles anybody, whatever, I don't go around going to the police department and saying, you know what, I'm moving. I'm tired of you guys profiling me, and I'm going to have all my black brothers picket you. And it's just, Ken, here's my view. You're right. You're not going to change this man's point of view. If he's a racist, he's a racist. All of a sudden, they're not going to see the light and say, oh, my God, I'm a racist. I must love black people. And, Ken, is that the message that white people are getting with this case? I must love all black people because if I don't, I'm going to be persecuted. Is this the message that's being sent?
I actually think it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the problem. We've started to confuse being polite with being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And now the second you say anything that's against the social norm, you're immediately branded a heretic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm hearing a lot of back static. Here's what's going to happen, you guys.
I'm on the traffic, Brian.
Oh, okay, Jesse. Okay. Kiddo, I'm just going to mute you a little. You're okay now? Because I want to give our guest a chance to have a clear channel and get his message across. Okay, sounds like you're okay. Go ahead, Ken. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're on the right track, and I believe you. If you had to send a message to white people and the message that you're getting now as a white person, what message are you receiving?
I don't really consider myself white.
Oh, well, you're Greek.
I am Greek, but that doesn't necessarily make me white.
No, in my book.
Here's the thing about the quote-unquote white community, and a lot of people are going to be pissed off me for it.
Right, go ahead.
Back in World War II,
right,
and this is stretching here, the Aryans tried to take credit for the building of the Parthenon, despite the fact that Aryans were supposedly Vikings. And that's kind of how I feel about the European community and how they view Greece. Greece is really only Caucasian when it suits someone else's needs.
You know what?
I mean, look,
that's poetic.
We persecute ourselves more than any other ethnicity or color or country. I actually, like, white people, I don't even know what the hell that means, to be honest with you.
That's a good answer, because who was on our show yesterday that says, oh, that was Chris, when he says, I'm not white, and you're the second person, I don't know what white is anymore. You know, that's interesting. That is interesting. All right, I agree. But, okay, as a person in who Greek descent, but the message right now, let's just go with the message. What is the message that we're sending, the black people are sending out to other races about this situation? And then we're jubilant, we're dancing about it, we're yelling victory. What is the message that you guys are receiving?
Again, I don't know how to comment on that. I've never considered myself part of that whole group.
Okay, non-black. What is the message that a non-black race or culture is receiving from saying that this man said this in his privacy of his own home? He did not use a nigger or N-word or anything. He said black people. And he also said on the tape, you know, I like Magic Johnson. You should admire Magic Johnson. All I ask is that you keep a low profile and that you don't bring them to my games, which he's entitled. If you had a business and you say, I don't want him coming to my business, fine. Now, he said it in the privacy of his own home. It was an illegal taping, so you cannot go to court and say, you know, I got this illegally, so now I want legal judgment on it because it was illegal. You can't make a ruling on something illegal. But anyway, but the message I feel, and I'm a non-white person or European cultured person, I'm getting the message like we can't say shit no more. If we say black people, it's going to scare the shit out of us. We can't say the N-word, it's going to scare the shit out of us. So I'm just asking you, the message that you see here, you think there's going to be a backlash or a blacklash towards non-black race?
Let me give you another question then. How do you feel about the Human Torch? The Human Torch. In the remake of the Fantastic Four movie, they had cast an African American role with the Human Torch.
Right. I'm not familiar with that. I know the Fantastic Four movies. I'm not familiar that they recast that. Did they recast that show?
Well, they took off the director because of his casting decision, yeah.
Really? And why is that? What happened?
Every single person who was not part of the African American community thought that this was a huge step forward for solidarity and equality, right?
Right.
The problem is that African Americans didn't give a shit about the casting at all. And they thought that it was irrelevant because, well, the Human Torch is supposed to be part of a family of people who are Protestant and from England and incredibly white, then it raises questions as to how the kid was raised, whether or not their parents cheated on them, etc. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I honestly believe that there's only a very small portion of the population who actually cares about this story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm Canadian. I don't even follow basketball at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were going to say the owner of the Maple Leafs said don't bring black people to our hockey games, I really don't think it would make that much of a difference because maybe we have three.
Mm-hmm. Wow, my girlfriend said the same thing. She says, I don't think many people care about the Clippers. It's not so much the Clippers, it's just the message that it's sending. And I mean, Robbie, I'll go to Robbie really quickly. Robbie, are we sending a message to non-blacks with the message going on here that you cannot even say I don't want blacks here? Are we sending a message to you guys?
I think it is that way. I mean, he's entitled to his opinion. His opinion
right.
is if you hang around and party with black people, then you're somehow degrading yourself. That's a racist thought. And he
right.
was great head. He was trying to protect this girl. Is all he was trying to do in his mind. So
right.
I understand his view, but black people need to. I find more black people are prejudiced than white people.
Well, she may have a point there too, and she does have a point. And a lot of people go, oh my God, did she really say that? She does have a point.
Well,
we have good reason to be. We're still waiting for our 40 acres and a mule. Where is it? But I understand.
And I houses of all of the ethnicities with FEMA. I went to one lady in Chicago, opened her gate, and she gets on her porch with her hands on her hips, and she says, what are you doing here? I said, I'm with FEMA. She goes, I don't do white people. Real mean that. And I looked at her and said, oh, we got something in common. I don't either. And she laughed, and she let me in. You know, you got to make a joke of it. But,
first
thing, I don't do white people. And, you know, I was like, well, I don't either. So, you know, what the hell?
Exactly.
But I found more people in the field that are prejudiced, that are black, than that are white.
Okay. And if you go to a comedy store, and if you listen to a black comedian, it's funny, all white people sound like, well, you know, with the nasal and the dorky sound and everything, and we'll make fun of white people. Nobody's up in arms. We go to a white club, and if they do anything with black, I want to know if comedians have that pressure. If they can say black jokes and everything, do they have that pressure? Because black comedians can say anything. You get that point? Now, I'm black.
I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Well, see, it's not. It's not.
I know.
We can
but
listen to
not.
A rap
that's
song that has nigger, nigger, nigger in it, and I guarantee you, you cannot listen to the same song, turn out and pull down your windows and yell and sing that song through a black neighborhood.
No.
It's so
not right.
We don't, it's not good for the goose or the gander or whatever. I'm thinking, I go with Ken Beck. It's an old white dude. Are you shocked that he's racist? How many owners, black owners, are there in the NFL? Anybody get a clue? How many black coaches? And then the hypocrisy is the one that's getting me. And I'm worried about the message. Because for us to come together as people, we have to recognize there are racists in the world. And we have a choice not to hang around with them or not to do business with them. Done. But do we have a choice to storm their business, take their business away, ban them, destroy their families because they don't want a particular race or sex in their house?
No.
This is the message that is worrying me. And this is a message that I'm saying there's no victory in this. What this is going to do is give us, and I call it a blacklash, but it's going to give us a backlash of this. This is going to create more hatred than not, because you cannot force somebody, you cannot force a racist, I don't care what you take from him, I believe what Ken says, no matter what you do to him, it's not going to change his opinion. So what are we punishing this guy for? We're punishing him for being an ignorant racist? But he has every right to be. As Ken has every right to be in Ontario and voting for Rob Ford.
Exactly.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm just trying to make a point, but I understand. But, Ken, I understand, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I like guys like you. You're honest, and it's not always politically correct to say what you want to say, what's on your mind. And it's refreshing because, you know, we get caught up in this bullshit and this hype and this crap that we forget that there's another side to this. What is the message we're sending? We didn't have no victory over some guy who's 80 years old. You want victory? Pick at the police department who's killing us. That's a victory. Here in
the
state.
The main problem that I have with this whole news story is that, again, it's not really news. There are so many other things that are happening in America right now, especially with the poverty line, and this is what makes the front page?
Exactly. Exactly. We look like idiots. And that's why I'm going to be running for the NAACP. I'm going to put my name on the ballot. First thing I'm going to do is let white women in who are very horny. I am going to merge the racists and let us understand people.
Well, the main problem that I have with the reception that this whole issue has received, it's just you can't meet hate with hate.
Because exactly.
The second you do that, you're just kind of adding to it. You're multiplying it. It doesn't serve anybody.
No, it doesn't. But you can't change them either, Ken. If you recognize that guy who says, stay off my lawn, and he comes out with a shotgun, you stay off the guy's lawn. I mean, you recognize that there are some ignorant people in this world. And hopefully you have enough common sense to say, he's an ignorant person. Don't mess with him. You don't want black people come to my games? Guess what, black people? Don't go to the game.
Don't go. Right. Let's see his ticket sales fail. Let's see his players quit. Let's see his employees quit. Then he doesn't have a team, and then he's lost it all on his own.
That would hurt him more than any but thing. You're right. That hurts. Hit him in the pocketbook. That hurts him more than anything. And I guarantee you, next time he'll go to the game, he'll be in blackface just for your support. But that's what
you
got to do.
If you force him to lose his business, you make him a martyr.
Yes.
That's the issue. It has his racism is secondary for the most part. It's secondary. It's the reaction that's going to hit the news. Because let's face it, if he says he doesn't want, whoever at the game, fine, whatever. It doesn't mean they can't show up because he has no control over who buys a ticket or not.
Right.
But at the same point in time, if he realizes, oh, shit, I've just lost about, 75% of my income off of this one statement, then he'll be forced to realize he's an idiot on his own accord.
See, kid,
the second you sit there and you start persecuting him, all that's going to end up happening is all of a sudden all of the fringe groups or the fringe Caucasian groups are going to rise up and say, see, this is what's happening to America.
Mm-hmm.
And then, bam, he's a celebrity. If he isn't already because of this one stupid comment.
That's right. And that's what I mean by blacklash. And, you know, we think we live in a bubble. Okay, that's fine in California. But California, we got 49 other states, and a lot of them are southern, Alabama, Mississippi, New Mexico, Texas. You forget. And that these people are going to go, and just what you said, Ken, they're going to make him a martyr, saying you're going to take the man's business away because he doesn't want black people around. We have to understand we are in a culture here that, I hate to say it, we're in a racist culture. Don't you think, Ken? Is that a great statement in here? Jews, we don't like the Jews. We don't like the blacks. We don't like the gays. We want to, our kids, we want to trade them on an AK-47, gun control. I mean, we're a mixture of a lot of people here, and we don't all share the same views. And we have to recognize that. And we don't march on every view that we don't feel that's moral. We'll destroy ourselves. But you're right. I'm afraid that they're going to make him a martyr. And here's what's happening that you guys don't know. I think Ken knows, and probably Robbie, Kelly. It's like, and I'm sorry, and everybody else. Maybe I'm being facetious. I'm sorry. What happened is that for him to lose his team, he would have to have three-fourths votes from the owners. Mark Cuban said this. This is a slippery slope because Mark Cuban's an owner. They're thinking, if this guy can get removed and get his team taken away for saying something like that, we can lose our team. How many times have these owners, these old owners, partied with these hookers and this, and they already said some shit? Now you're going to hear a lot of other people saying shit to get some fast cash. And if this guy loses his team on this, we're going to be in court forever. What's your take on that, Ken?
I don't disagree with it, but...
Yeah. Well, these owners are not going to vote to get rid of him because if they do, they cut their throats because now they're vulnerable for some woman or somebody make allegations against them and they may lose their team. So, no, I don't think these owners are going to vote for – and these guys are friends. Magic Johnson said the first thing. When I first came out of the league, I was introduced by Jerry Buss, took me to meet Donald, this guy. And we were friends. Magic Johnson said it. And so these owners are friends. You think they're going to vote out their friend and take his team away? You guys, what world do we live in?
Well, it really depends on whether or not they want to be associated with the backlash or not.
You know, America has short memories. We're going to move on to something else. Something else is going to hit the news. And this is as soon as the Clippers lose what they are, and I'm rooting for them to lose because I think if I'm paying somebody $35 million. It's in a contract. You're protected by the Players Association and by the owners. You pay a game. You're a professional. You play the game. The rest of the crap, fine. You still go to work. You don't protest against because the owner said something. You're a professional. You play the game. That's what you're paid for. And for them to do a protest and act like little babies who are getting paid $65 million for a game that a kid will play for free, I don't appreciate that at all. If my boss was a racist, Kelly's a big racist, and I'm still on the radio.
God.
If I said, Kelly, you know, you got to quit calling me the N-word, I'll get on the radio, I would have quit long ago. And then she plays Bojangle to get me hype. I don't appreciate that either.
Hey, when I was real little, when I was learning about this racism stuff, in my mind, I thought that blonde people had to be with blonde people and black-haired people had to be with black-haired people. That's how I'm assuming. How can you say, you know, the black?
I need to send her up and send her.
Okay, so since we're hearing personal things, I'm gonna have to mute you, Jesse, because that's your personal business. And as much as Mrs. Mitchell sounds hot, I'm going to protect you of your personal.
Jesse's already muted. Jesse's already
okay.
Muted.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
What does it mean?
So anyway, we'll move off of that, but you're absolutely right, Robbie. We're not going to end racism. Racism is always going to be with us. I'm saying recognize it, and if you don't like what you don't like something, move on. Just don't support it. I believe what Ken said. That would hurt him more. Black people, stay away from your game. I'm not going to the Clippers. Who cares? The Clippers suck. And hearing Magic Johnson, who is a Laker, say don't go to a Clipper game is kind of irony. So what?
Yeah.
You got a Laker saying, don't go to a Clipper game. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like you said, he's going to cut off his own neck to spite his nose.
Yeah, you know, Magic Johnson got to remember, too, when he had HIV, he was forced to early retirement because nobody wanted to play with him. Even the referees didn't even want to touch him, so he was faced with HIV. So he was villainized there, and it was unfair to him, and he cried like a baby. Shut up, Magic. Grow a pair of balls. That's stupid. All right, Ken. Thank you. I need to hear your views. Let's talk about something interesting about your series. Okay, we're back to the book. Now, Sex and Lies. You wrote it in a month. You woke up pissed off, and you decided to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you are at this point now where you are promoting the book, but you're looking for a publisher? Is that where we are?
I'm actually looking to have it transferred into visual medium before I approach a publisher.
Okay. 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 So, where are we at with that? What are you looking for right now?
Right now, I'm trying to focus within Toronto and try to find a production company who will pick it up here. I mean, I'm going to give them a certain period of time, and then after that, I guess I'm going to have to move south because that's how things go in Canada, unfortunately. The problem with the publishing industry right now basically has to do with the fact that they want proof to know that a product will sell before they can even accept a novel, which is weird, but that's how things go now. They want a pre-existing fan base. They want to make sure that a product is viable, and I know that this thing is viable because, again, I wrote the thing in a month. The rough draft has already been picked up for reproduction. I still retain first rights. And if I can write a rough draft that gets picked up for reproduction, then obviously it'll sell.
Right. Right.
So now,
but,
I figured
okay,
film
really,
is the best place
okay,
to
what
do
I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody except for Ken because I'm only, and I know we cannot, since we're all on phones, and I know that we cannot control the outside noise. I'm not being rude, but it is being rude that if Ken cannot, thank you, Kelly. I think you already did it. Ken, it's only you and I, so would you please continue?
Thanks. Well, the rough draft was already picked up at two places, actually. One is sweptmedia.ca, and the other one is a website run by this guy named Ben John Smith in Australia. And I don't know why I have so many people reading my stuff in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a fair deal. And if both of these people find the product viable before it's even been edited or finished, I can't for the life of me understand why a publisher wouldn't want it. But since it was originally written for a visual medium in the first place, it makes sense to approach them first.
That's a gutsy move. A lot of people would have just went to self-publishing first, get the audience, get themselves known, and then go to look for the media, a different medium for the book, but you're going to go right into production. The problem of it is that I see is that, is this your first book?
Technically. I mean, I'm
okay.
In the process of writing about four.
Okay, because if I was a publisher or someone in the media for production company, I would say, how's your track record? Because it takes, we're going to put in a lot of money. For your book is spectacular. I love your book. And there's so many books out there that could be a great movie. You know that. But you're right. With social media and so much money that they would have to put into this book that doesn't have a track record, we're going to be a little hesitant. You could understand that, right, Ken?
Oh, of course I could understand that. And I completely – like I'm not the sort of person who's going to turn around and say, oh, those bastards, they don't like me, whatever. It's just I understand that money comes first.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to sit there and waste your time on a product that's going to put you in the hole. At the same point in time, though, every single movie that has come out in the past 10 years with a rehashed plotline is something else. It kind of feels to me as if the media has kind of given up and said, we have no new ideas. I mean,
True.
Didn't they release, like, they've released two remakes of classic 80s movies like RoboCop and Total Recall?
Mm-hmm.
Were they necessary?
They had RoboCop, when it first came out, it was a cult movie. It made some money. They made their money back. So their track record and make money. There's an audience for it. And they're also doing a remake of, I think, Ben-Hur. They're talking about a remake of Ben-Hur.
God.
So, yeah. Well, the industry is losing money. Here's what's happening, Ken. Nobody's paying $14.95 to go to a movie anymore. And in another 5 years, I guarantee you, streaming movies to your TV or whatever, the movie houses are closing down. They can't even afford to stay open anymore. So when they have a new idea, they're skeptical because they're thinking, you know, the percentage of this movie, nobody knows about it. There's not a track record. There's not a book that we can see how many sales, so it doesn't have a built-in audience. Why should we pour the money into it? We're going to lose money. It's going to cost us a lot more money to get it out there than maybe the movie's going to make for us. For instance, what's that Chariot of Fire? What is that one with the kid who does those games? What is the games? Help me
Bender's
out. Yeah. That book, and it hit the generation. It hit the demographic. The kids were reading that book, 9, 10, 11, 12. It was a bestseller. It hit the demographic. And same thing with Harry Potter. It hit the demographic. And when they went into the theater, they knew they were going to make a boatload of money. So guys like you who are talented, have a great idea, and a book could be spectacular, it's going to have an uphill battle.
I understand that, but at the same point in time, I'm friends with a lot of independent authors, and they're the most critical people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I run an idea past them and they say that it sucks, they will flat out tell me. Like, there are a couple out there. One of them is Tabitha Sterling. She's brilliant when it comes to her own writing. She actually writes first-hand protest accounts of what it was like living in London during the 80s. And it's not pretty. Like, in terms of the content, it's not pretty. It's honest. But at the same point in time, I've already told you I'm an incredibly negative man. I'm filled with self-loathing. I would not be putting myself out there if I thought that this was not a product that could sell.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm terrified of falling flat on my ass.
I love suicide authors. I love it. But you know what? You're a realist, too. When you're a negative man, that means you're a realist. You see... You see the ugly, and you know the ugly is out there, and you welcome the ugly. And you go, okay, here I am, tear my heart apart. I can take it. I'm strong. But then you still got to play the game, and you still got a dream. So how does that work for you? You know, it's just hard. I don't know where to go with it, Ken, because I have not read the book, and I'm sure you're brilliant. Kelly thinks you're brilliant. It sounds like a great book. I have talked to, there's so many authors who came on a show, and they had great books. But they're having a hard time. A lot of them just give up, and they do self-publishing, which can go for $500 to $10,000 just to pay to get your book out there, and you're never going to make the money. So what do you do?
Well, the first thing that I wrote, it's a project called Sanctified. It's currently being edited by a woman who lives in Greece, actually. She's also edited my attempt at romance under a fake name, but that's not the point. I wouldn't have all of these people coming to me and offering advice unless they believed in the product, unless they fully believed that it was a viable opportunity to get into the media and break through that stupid wall that we've set up for ourselves. So I'm not that worried. It's just a matter of people reading the thing and saying, okay, we can do this.
Okay.
That's all it comes down to. And again, like, there's not a day where I wake up where I don't wish I could fall back asleep.
Right.
So for any, like, for me especially, to be able to sit there and say, I think this can sell, I personally believe that says a lot.
Okay. Have you started a Kickstarter campaign?
Nope.
That's one way of getting your book out there.
That's true, except I don't feel comfortable asking people to fund a project that isn't completely finished yet. In terms of visual medium, sure, Sex, Lies, and Rosengates, I've already tried to read it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even reading the thing, it's approximately 100 pages on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Should come out to about 4 hours of screen time.
Yeah, you're going to have a problem.
Not necessarily, not if it's turned into a series and broken up.
You see, there you go. So now you're going into a different medium. Now you're going into a miniseries. Now I'm looking at Hallmark, Lifetime. You're looking at a miniseries. So now you're looking in television, which is a bigger beast.
No, of course. I have a background in film. Like, don't get me wrong. I have a bare minimum 8 years of post-secondary under my belt. But it's just, it's one of those things where if you don't take a chance, you're never going to figure out whether or not you can make it.
Yeah, but taking a chance with a plan, you're going to make it. And let me ask you a question, because I can relate to you. I mean, you and I are, I mean, I can really relate to you. So when I ask you questions, it's almost about what I would do. How come you haven't finished it? Is it just that you just started, or you go away sometimes, you come back, and you write a couple of pages, and then you need to get away from it? How come you're not finishing it? You're just sitting there and saying, it's done.
Oh, it's not done. It's actually been built up to 200 pages now.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm about to start off on the third act of it. But, yeah,
so
I'm approximating it's going to be about 300 pages for the first book by the time that I'm done. But Sex, Lies, and Rose and Gates as a standalone story is finished.
Okay. All right. So, I like your book. We're promoting it. This one's done. So tell me, you're still going to go, instead of self-publishing, because it costs a lot of money, let's just be honest, this book is done, but it's not on Amazon right now. How come? It's done.
Because it's just the first story in a series. What I want to do is I want to have at least three stories finished before I submit it to a publisher.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Like, I want the thing to be a bare minimum 90,000 words before I even consider going to a publishing firm, because I don't want it to just be a novella. I want this to be a book series. So right now I'm trying to make each book approximately a week in this guy's life.
Hmm. So you are Greek, so that tells me, by listening to you, you are very anal. Well, are you a perfectionist?
I can be when it comes to things that don't involve my own life, yeah.
Yeah. Now we're exploring this. I see here. Are you afraid of rejection? Even though you're a negative person, it's almost like you expect rejection if you're that negative.
I do expect rejection, but at the same point in time, if that's what I expect going into it, then who gives a shit if someone doesn't like it?
Mm.
Like, that's what I mean by people ignoring negativity. It can be really powerful if you look at it the right way.
Well, I do, because I live in that neighborhood. The rent's cheap. Yeah. But, okay, Ken. Now, how do you feel if you put your book out there and you get these morons saying, you know what, I don't like it. You know what, it's the same story before. They tear apart your work. You're a negative person. Do you go after those bastards, or do you just say, okay, I listen to your constructive criticism and I move on, or do you change your book because of the negative comments? How do you react towards that?
I tear apart my own work probably more than anybody else possibly could. Wrote this thing called I Am a Cowboy Under a Fake Name of, like, Alexander Curtis, and I hate the romance genre. I absolutely despise it. So when I wrote the thing, it was under request by my editor, the same person who's working on Sanctified. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't like it at all. But the first day that I self-published it, I did self-publishing for that because it's a romance novella and I don't care. Mm-hmm. But when I released it, it sold somewhere around the vicinity of 25 copies in the first 2 hours, and there's 4 or 5-star reviews on it. So I'm not going to complain.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand it.
And you hated it. And you probably hated it that it sold so much because you despised it. Am I correct, Ken?
I don't despise my work. I feel that that's a little harsh. It's just, I'm the type of person who isn't a great fan of his own stuff. Like, I will never be satisfied with a single thing I release. with the exception of Anima Libera.
And that's what we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that actually says quite a bit.
Okay, and we're going to find out what makes that so special. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open up, talk to me about that. We're going to do that transition right now. So why is that book so special? And the other ones, you know, you did it out of being pissed off, and you said, this is what you want. This is what you want, you morons. I'll give you what you want. And then you find out that it's that these morons love that, and you're going, how could you love this? You're intellectually stupid. Am I correct, Ken?
I wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay. It's just me. I'm just
stupid.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you're a better man than I am, but go ahead. So, yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Let's talk about Libra. Is it Anima Libra?
Anima Libra, yeah.
Let's talk about that. This one is close to your heart. What makes it so close to your heart, and what is this book about or series about?
Initially, it started off as my joking attempt to write a 10,000-page orgy.
Okay.
Yeah, except I got bored after the first 2,000 words, and I looked back on it, and I thought, hey, I could probably make this into a story, and then that's how it turned into a story.
So you made a porn with words.
Yeah.
Basically.
it was meant to be an inside joke because I used to go on the site with a bunch of other writers when I first started out. And they said that there was absolutely no way that somebody could write 10,000 words of just pure sex. And I'm like, oh, I could do that. And then it turns out that I can't, so I just turned it into a story. But
people seem
to respond well to it, so hey.
But why is it so close to your heart, though? You said this one's special. So, I mean, what did you put into this book or series book? Hopefully it'll be a series. Than the others. What personal thing you put in? What, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I looked at the industry. I looked at the current trends that were out there, and I just said, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly honest with you, like I don't have anything against young adult, not like novelists or authors. Nothing against them personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's just every fucking book that's been like a New York Times bestseller in that genre has always followed the same formula. There's a girl, and then a boy falls in love with her, but the boy has a problem, but the girl falls in love with him anyway, and then there's a dispute, and they end up together. That's every fucking book that's been made into a movie over the past decade.
Yeah.
So this is
yeah.
kind of my response to that. Like, the main character is 34 years old. He's filled with self-loathing. Like, he looks at the city as if it's a living entity. And I don't – have you ever been to Toronto?
No, but I'm going there. I would love to visit Toronto. It's a beautiful country. Canada's beautiful.
No, it's beautiful. It just doesn't have an identity.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like, if you can't describe Toronto in a single word because it doesn't matter who you ask. They're going to have a different answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to explore that more than anything else. I decided to ask the question as to why Toronto lacks that identity, why Toronto isn't definable. And then I put that into a character, and that's why he has no face. So the reason why it's kind of close to my heart is, well, the same reason as anything else. Like, for me, Anima Libera is honest. It's honest and it's bullshit.
But it's good work.
Oh, I think it is. A lot of other people seem to think it is.
I love it. It's honest and it's bullshit. Hey, it's my best I've ever done.
I love it. Every piece of fiction is essentially just exaggerated bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to cut corners around that. Like, it's true. Like, you're essentially lying to someone for a countless amount of pages, and then they ask you for more. And I honestly think that being a writer or being a director or even working in something like even art itself, that's what it is. You're lying to people and they pay you for it.
Mm-hmm.
I see no reason to lie about it.
But if you're lying to someone and it makes them happy, or maybe they can go into a fantasy for an hour of their lives or their dreadful lives, Is it really bad?
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's still bullshit.
Well, we have so much real stuff in our lives. We see so much carnage in our lives, and we're dealing with bullshit. Maybe we need some bullshit to escape from, and we count on people like you to write us some bullshit stories so we can escape for 2 hours of our lives.
Oh, it is kind of amazing if you think about it that way.
I'm going to open
seriously.
Up this book.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, it's just fiction in general. It's one of those strange entities where people need that escape, so you lie to them, and then you just continue to lie to them repeatedly. And it's strange.
Well, not if you keep lying
to
them.
Previous... Sorry.
Because would you admit that if you keep lying to them and they keep seeing it over and over again, that lie becomes the truth. That lie becomes hope. It's like the girl when she's a little girl and she wants the prince to come and rescue her, or you're going to grow up to marry the handsome guy and live in a 3.2-story house, and they live in an apartment with the bill collectors calling them. I mean, that's a lie. I think girls are brought up with that lie from the beginning of when they're little girls, that prince is going to come and sweep them off their feet. And reality hits them when they're 16, or actually 19 and 20, and then they divorce because they bought the lie. Would you go that far, say, Ken, that sometimes people will buy that lie and they get reality confused with the lie, and when reality actually hits them in the face, the world falls apart?
Well, it depends on whether or not they've read Bronte.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever read or seen Wuthering Heights.
I have, yes. I am a reader.
Okay.
And
if you grew up reading that, I'm pretty sure that your entire idea of the perfect relationship would be kind of shattered.
Yeah, I kind of believe Catcher in the Rye. But yeah, you're right. We root for the underdog. We want the prince to come. The girls want to be Rapunzel. They want to let down their hair so the prince could come up to them and rescue them. This is the lie. We want to believe that the United States is the most diplomatic country in the world, and we're always right. We're never wrong. We don't do bad things. We are Americans. We do not do bad things. You guys are the evil ones, and we don't want to believe that we're the evil empire, and some people call us that. Writing your books make us believe the lies that we're good. You may think it's bullshit, but your book makes a lot of people believe, and it might be lies, but we want to believe those lies. As long as it doesn't hurt anyone and makes you rich, I understand, because people don't want to face ugly. People don't want reality. It's ugly, Ken. And it's scary, and it scares us. What would you say about that?
I don't think reality is nearly as bad as everyone makes it out to be. I just think that we've become so desensitized to being able to cope with the negativity that the second we see anything that's kind of out of place or anything that remotely upsets us, we immediately fly into a frenzy. I mean, imagine you as you are now.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Considering what Putin's doing and considering the backlash that happened after the Sochi Games, would you be able to deal with it if you were placed in that environment?
I would be able to deal with it because it would be a form of my existence, because if I did not deal with it, I would be persecuted and probably locked up or killed. But being an intelligent man, I would have to conform to the society's rules. Do I morally, inside my heart, would I like it? No, I wouldn't. I would have to leave Russia, but could I deal with it? I would have to, because it's our existence. I would ask you, could you deal with it? All of a sudden, you go to Russia. You're doing a book tour. You're going to be there 6 months. And all of a sudden, you're going to walk around in Red Square in a dress when you know that they don't like homosexuals?
No, I wouldn't do that. I don't shave my legs.
Oh, see, now that's why they would arrest you. But that's what I'm saying. We deal with our – human beings have a way of – conforming to their environment. Would you agree with me?
No,
wherever it is.
So even in prison, it's not gay if you're butt-fucking another guy. I'm still straight, but, you know, that's the only hole I can get until another 7 years. But they're not gay.
Still pretty gay.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right, too. I was just trying to be liberal. All right, at this point, Johnny Rock is here, and I'm going to – and Johnny Rock? Robbie? Johnny Rock? I'm going to bring up the phones. Okay, do you have a question? Do you have a – oh, hi, Johnny. Johnny, do you have a question? Johnny is an actor. His career is to lie. He plays characters – so people can get involved in his character and believe in him, and for that 2 hours, root for him or wish the bastard dies a very violent death. And if they do, either or, he is a successful actor. His whole job is to lie to people. Right, Johnny?
That's correct.
So, Johnny, if you have a question to an author who feels this way, you've been listening to the conversation, as an actor, is it bad that people are falling for the bullshit? Because if they didn't fall for the bullshit, we wouldn't have actors or movies. Am I correct? Because we know there's no Spider-Man. But we, for 2 hours, we want to fall for the bullshit, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's just a way to escape reality for a little while. And, sometimes truth, I think it could be a truth in our lives that we're watching something that's not true to the author, but it's true for us, and we can relate to it. It's like, wow, you know, that this story hits home. It's a completely fabricated story, but yet there's somebody out there that lives it, and it's reality for them. You know, I grew up. I think we're all actors. Everyone's actors. We have to act. You know, we act differently when we go on an interview. We act differently when we go on our first date. When we go out publicly, socially, we act in a different way. And when we're at home alone, when you're home alone, when it's just you and yourself, that's when you're living real. I grew up having to put a smile on my face, and it's like a lot of us, and especially actors, when we go through something, and comedians too. Especially with comedians, it seems like most comedians that I know, including myself, have gone through some horrible times, and it's a way for us to escape. And I'll make jokes about it, for instance, I say, I came from a hand-me-down family. A lot of us came from a hand-me-down family. The only problem was my older sibling was my sister, so I'd be in school. And people would come up to me and say, "Hey, didn't your sister wear that dress last year?" I'm like, "No," but we have to put a smile on our face. It's like a clown. We hide behind a mask. And but the truth does set you free. I've lived a lie the longest, and now I'm coming forward and I'm speaking the truth and the things that have happened, and I'm not alone. Every day, someone new comes up to me and says, "Hey, you're not alone. I stand with you. I've gone through the same thing." And it's happening to everybody, and it affects everybody, and it's time to make a change. That's all.
But don't you think Ken gives us escape? It's so vital that he does his work, because a lot of people are going through pain right now. And I know, Ken, you're a righteous guy. I know you're a negative guy. I'm listening to you. You're an honest guy. And that's your perk, because not many people are forefront like you are. And I think that's great. And I know what you mean, Ken. And I'm going back to Johnny, that, this is what the people want. This is what's selling. And it's garbage. So I have to conform to writing garbage so I can get myself sort of make a living. I just want people to wake up and saying, "Come on, we can reach up to a higher level, people." But you don't understand a higher level. You want the same old bullshit that's been, I have a cold, that's been circulated over and over again since 1940. You're not even opening up your mind to new writing or new projects. Am I right, Ken?
What I missed the most, and I wasn't allowed to see this, unfortunately.
Okay.
I miss having heroes.
in the literary field. Like when you have, like when you had guys like Hunter S. Thompson come out, you have this man who was completely brilliant, who was splashing his heart all over the page. Like even Tennessee Williams, he did the exact same thing, and they were completely unconventional, and they weren't terrified of being unconventional. It's just now we seem to be subjecting ourselves to the same thing over and over again, and that's what I mean by bullshit.
But it makes
money. The fact
money.
That nobody has had the balls to stand up and say, I want something different, and I want you to see it.
Because that doesn't make money. It scares people. Change. Scares
people.
People
need fear.
But they need fear that they're accustomed to and familiar with, instead of fear that they're not familiar with. And I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
Johnny?
Evolution is born of conflict.
It is.
Yeah, you see, you want to clear a room, just bring up child sexual abuse. That will clear a room. People don't want to talk about it. It's actually uncomfortable.
On that note, I do want to say something to you, Johnny. I completely understand where you're coming from. My grandfather, he suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. He saw a lot of stuff when he was younger in Greece back in World War II in the communist era. He's still suffering from it. He wakes up in the middle of the night and just starts screaming. So I think it's an incredibly brave thing that you're doing, and I'm very happy and I'm very pleased that you decided to step up.
But it's a very difficult thing. It's really difficult. People don't. You know, I never knew it. Post traumatic stress disorder. You know, a psychiatrist told me last week that I have that. You know, I'm suffering from that. You know, I don't know if suffering is the word for it, because it's kind of a healing thing for me. I don't understand what PTSD is. I have it, okay, whatever. But I know that every day I'm getting stronger just simply by talking to other people and knowing that by what I'm doing, I'm helping other people. I could be bawling my eyes out here alone in my house, just me and my dog, and yet I'm messaging someone and doing wonderful, awesome things for this person, and they're saying how strong I am. Well, I'm not that strong. I'm bawling my eyes out, you know? But I know it's something I have to do.
But you're not afraid to do that, though, and that's what makes you strong. You're facing it. You're facing that fear. You're facing that negativity, and you're owning it.
Well, somebody has to. Yeah.
There you
that's
go.
The way I look
Wait,
at it. Somebody has to. You know, that's the way I look at it. Somebody has to.
We have a caller here. 818, you're live. Your name, please, and your location. 818. Hello? Okay. It's okay. You don't have to talk. Some people will call in and listen. I think it's probably either... you can listen, and I'm going to keep your mic open, 818, and when you want to talk, just let us know. Ken, did something happen to you as a child to give you this negative view on life and things like that?
Well, I guess that would have started when I was still in elementary school. You see, Canada is also not devoid of racism, unfortunately. I wish it were, but it's not. I was always very quiet because I was introspective. I didn't like hanging out with other kids. So due to the fact that I didn't talk and the fact that my last name has too many vowels and syllables, they stuck me in ESL for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not good. Well, look at the bright side.
I'm sorry, what was that? They stuck in what? ESL?
ESL.
English is a second language.
What's that?
Translated and here would be, you know, with the slow kids. Am I correct, Ken?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And see, what they used to do before, they used to put the kids on Ritalin and they just let them stay in a corner and drool on themselves. So,
oh,
but
I'm on
yes,
amphetamine.
Oh, you are? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, if you have a nervous breakdown, please don't leave because I need the ratings. Let's see. So, let me ask you. I'm going to take a stab in the dark here. Ken, was your father an alcoholic?
Oh, no. My parents, they are literally the most loving and honest people I've ever met. And I'm not saying that because I'm biased. They're incredibly supportive, especially my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have any problems on the family front when it came to my childhood. It was always other people.
So, you know, I had the same problem you did. When I was a kid, I used to stutter. I couldn't even talk. I mean, it was so bad that if I said one word, it would last 10 minutes. And people, you know, and that's like saying a word like hi. So people wouldn't talk to me, so I felt self-conscious about it. I wouldn't talk in school. And I was a quiet one in school. I didn't want to make friends because of my problem I had as a stutter. So you went to ESL because you did not relate to the other children, and you're just a quiet kid. And so now they stuck you there. What happened in ESL?
Well, basically, I was treated like an outcast. I was ostracized from everyone else in the surrounding community, and I might have had only about, let's see, 3 friends for about 15 years of my life.
Mm-hmm. For 15 years of your life?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. How about your first sexual experience? How did that happen? And what kind of feeling did you have after that, your first girlfriend? Because that's traumatic for anybody. The reason I bring that up is very traumatic when you have your first sexual experience, and if you're a negative person, that could send you to the edge.
Well, thankfully, I've always been attracted to women who are kind of dark.
Uh-oh.
So it took a lot of the pressure off.
Oh, you mean, personality-wise. Oh, we're not doing the racism thing. Okay, I'm listening. I'm with you. Come on, Ken. I'm trying to make you smile, Ken. Come on, baby.
I am smiling and just having a cigarette at the same time.
All right. So you were really attracted to the psycho women with the tattoos and the rebels.
Oh, I still am.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Actually, the woman that I'm in the process of trying to get money to marry, she is almost as negative as I am. Beautiful person, brilliant mind, love her to death, but I guess it's just my type. Intelligent and weird and kind of psychotic.
Oh, God. Does she have a sister? Oh, I'm sorry. So,
oh, no, she has two. Unfortunately, they're both under the age of 20, so.
Oh, those are the great girls, you know. Those are, I'm being honest, I had experience with them. I love them to death. Kelly's like that, and that's why we've been partners for a while. So how long have you been dating this girl?
7 years. 7 years.
What's wrong, Ken? Where's the commitment here, buddy?
The commitment's there. The money isn't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, you don't stick with someone for 7 years if you're not sure.
That's true. Now, are you afraid to go out with positive women? Because negative women, I can imagine the sex is terrific.
Oh,
but
fantastic.
Oh, isn't it great? Oh, my God.
Oh,
if I can, if you can, I can only talk. Oh, my. Anyway, we have a show. I'm going to open it up. Johnny?
Well, you know, I was just thinking, if Ken's not needing money, we're all going to the casino in September. If you'd like us to double the money you do have, we're willing to take a chance. Send us the money and we'll play it. I'll give it a shot.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, that's 818 is speaking.
818.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Your name, sir?
My name is John Loretto. I was just speaking with Robbie. He told me to come in and listen in. I just came in to a point where you were talking about abuse and the audience for that and being neglected and so forth.
Right, right.
And I just wanted to ask, does Robbie, I don't know if she's there listening.
Yeah, she's
here.
Hi, Robbie. How are you?
Hi, John.
I'm okay. I just want to jump in waiting for Carolyn, you know what. But that's another topic. I wanted to ask you, because you seem to hit the point in every single aspect of it, and I just jumped in, so don't chew my ear off here for stepping on your toes, but is there an audience, basically, for people to watch a film that's related to that kind of problem? Were people willing to see that, or is just another show, like another, how you say, fart in the wind. Like, yeah, whatever. What's up, problems, whatever. You're not the only one.
Okay, so I just want to be clear. Is there an audience
Is there an audience for people to watch, or whether you think they will watch a movie about abuse and neglection? Something like we saw Precious. If you saw Precious, that gives you a broad idea of what you were talking about.
Or Crying Game.
You know, that's a little,
okay.
a little deep. That's a little deep, but yeah.
Okay. So
what a transsexual in the bathroom confusing people. I remember that movie.
I'm not really dealing on that character, meaning that people are going through these emotional traumas, you know, be it transsexual or Precious being abused mentally and physically. Okay, yeah, there is an audience. You just mentioned it, Precious. And for you mentioning that movie Precious, what dealt with that, you knowing that movie, you just answered your question. Yes, there is an audience. I will let Ken answer that because he's writing a book and everything. Ken, is there an audience for that?
Of course there is. Everyone wants to make sure that they're not alone. Everybody needs to know that.
Thank you for saying that. You know, I've been going through a lot of channels, sir, and trying to net with Robbie. And Robbie, you can jump in anytime. She read a story, actually. I think I'm allowed to say on in the air. I wrote a script with another partner of mine. It's called Johnny Comes Home. It's about a young man who's been alienated, neglected, thrown down the stairs at 6 months old, was in a coma for two months and a half. He has developed ADHD, dyslexic disorder, but the story is not based on that. But it brings in the people who have dyslexic or people who've been abused. And I've been going through so many channels before I met Robbie, telling, no, we don't want you to do this movie because you're neglecting the audience of the Latin market. And you'd be surprised. I mean, I'm not trying to be a bigot here, but I think based where I live in New York City and property areas not so richy, I've seen a lot of people in the Latin market abusing their wives and their children because they don't know how to read and write. I am a perfect example of abuse. Of verbal abuse and some physical abuse, and that gave me the power to move forward and write this great masterpiece that I feel it is. It's called Johnny Comes Home, to bring out people to let them know that we're living in a new era. It's okay to be dyslexic. No, it's not okay to be abused, and let other people recognize their problems. You know, if we don't make a change, it's going to keep going and going and going. It's like if I never recognize my problem, sir, and let's say, God forbid, I have a child or whatever, and I didn't fix my problem, that means my child is going to be the same asshole, pardon my friend, to like me. The cycle never is going to stop. So I figured, you know what? Why not have a passive man in the film? Not someone that you see like Edward Norton in 20, what's that movie he did? He played these KK guy. Was American History X. The only time you see a man cry or pass is when he's getting butt fucked by somebody in the prison cell, and then say I'm sorry. Now you say sorry because you've been abused and all that in there. What about the damage you did before to people, and then got your little brother shot at the end of the movie because it was too late?
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm glad that you're speaking about this topic. I'm glad that Robbie told me to listen in. I guess, you know what, the first time you're listening, I'm just listening, observing what you're doing. So I kind of feel more confident that there's people out there. I just wish there's people out there, if they're listening, come forward. Sponsor the fact that there's people out there like me, or maybe I feel like I'm the only one out there now as a male that wants to bring out an audience to say, hey, listen, don't be afraid because you don't know how to read and write. Don't be afraid because your dad kicked your ass because you didn't know what 2 + 2 was. I figured if movies can influence children to buy fast cars, like Fast and the Furious, and cause stupid things, or watch Beavis and Butthead throw bowling ball down the bridge in New Jersey, like I remember, and killing an innocent child because, oh, I saw it on TV. How about broadening these minds and saying, hey, man, don't be a punk. Don't be afraid because you don't know how to read and write. When you acknowledge your problem, things will be better. That's how I see it. I'm a living proof of it. I never quit. Thanks for Robbie. I never quit. A lot of TMI, Robbie, TMI, less TMI, but you got to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John has come a long way. John has come a long way. He's a brilliant screenwriter, and and we are working on some scripts that he has. But he has come a long way. I've had to do a lot of training with him, but he's a very good listener and a very good student. So that's all I can say about John.
Well, John, can I ask you a personal question?
Go right ahead, man. Go ahead. Ask away.
Okay. It sounds like, how was your childhood, John?
My childhood was, I don't know how to say it. It was rocky. It was like a roller coaster ride because my dad was young when he had me. My dad was 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm about to tell you the truth, the same thing I put in that movie. This is the truth. My dad was 20 going 21. He came from Cuba. You know, the communist country, worked his ass off, went to military school, LaSalle Military School, had his brother, my Uncle George. They worked hard. My grandparents worked hard to support them. Then all of a sudden, in 1978, I'm hatched, you know. And
that's
found
an interesting
out later
word.
On.
That's an interesting word, John. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I came out of wedlock, so I think I came out of I guess in the 70s was different. Everyone was having sex and injecting needles and not worrying about AIDS and whatnot. It's like, hey, love child, here we come, you know. You know, it's 1978, I guess. Woodstock was in 69 and 78, so the bridge of depression coming into the 80s. So I grew up with the 80s. So to answer your question, yeah, it was fun. It was depressing. I have my moments now at 36 that I am depressed a little bit. A little eager. I want to accomplish things quicker because of the past. I harass probably my manager a lot just to get things going because of another individual who's been abused as well. Mm-hmm. But I guess some people at certain age, at 65 or so, you can't train all dogs new tricks. You can try to guide them to a certain path, and then they smell it and they like it, then they'll go for it. If they don't, it's just another obstacle I have to deal with, and Robbie can jump in on that. But back to you. Yeah, I had fun.
Right.
You know, I was given everything. You know,
sure.
I was enabled. I was sheltered.
But
I
didn't
learn
think you deserved it, though, did you? You shit on
now
it.
Now I don't. But when the law tells you and every young child in the world that you're not an adult yet. So the day that you're born to the age of 18 or 17, let's say, is now your fault. You're a minor. So when you hit 18 all the way to now, it becomes your fault.
Mm-hmm.
So I always argue and say, well, I'm 18 years old now, all the way to 36. My parents gave me everything. I didn't learn the value of a dollar. I worked here and there and got fired because my attitude, my egotistic attitude, because I grew up watching someone getting away with it. Everyone watches Superman, Batman's a hero. My hero to me was a live human being because he always told me at 5 years old, this is it, this is how it is. You know, I knew what sex was at 5. I knew what porn was at probably 8. Watching scary movies like Freddy Krueger and all that stuff when it came out in 83, They Live. So I wasn't into that childhood Sesame Street, Walt Disney life as much like every other young child. I was jumped into a quick life. Remember, my mom was 15. My dad was 21. And, man, the shit that I went through with these people. I never met my mom. I never met her until age 22. You know, she asked her for $50, took her out to dinner. And I had a sister that's 9 years old. We went out to dinner. I was working construction, you know. I was 21, bettering myself a little bit. And I had $150 to $200, so I said, I want to see my mother. My grandmother freaked because she raised me since I was 6 months old. She thought that I was going to pack my shit, my bags, and live with her. So I'm not going to do that, but I have an entitlement to see who this lady is. So we went out to dinner, sir, and, you know, right away she wants me to call her mom. I felt like I don't know, it's like a goosebump kind of feeling, like a broken sweat. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, kind of mentality I felt. So towards the night, you know, I'm sitting with my sister for the first time, and I feel bad, you know. because she asked me, you know, at 9 years old, like, what does exit mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you don't know what the exit meaning is? You know, the word of the opposite of enter? You know what I mean? But 9 years old, she doesn't know what that is. And I found out that my mother told us in the dinner table that your sister never went to school. So why are you blocking this girl to go to school? Yeah, she was blocking her to go to school. Oh, because her husband, my husband threatened me to take the child away, and I didn't want to lose another child again like I did before. And that just opened a new can of worms there with that topic. But it was interesting. You know, I met her for the first time, gave her $50. I would have gave her $100, she asked. I mean, I feel bad. I could have just gave her everything. But she asked for $50. I was in that pose, you know, that I paused. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, here it is. Here's $50, go. And I never again saw her again. You know, she cursed my father out. I believe what she told me was true because I lived it. But the way she said it, it got me pissed off. I was like, no, it can't be true. But now through life went by, I think she was right. My dad was a very abusive man, very chismoso, which is like that chismo Cuban
right.
attitude, like, fuck you with my dinner, bitch, kind of there, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter if you're black, African, or whatever. It doesn't matter. Arrogant is arrogant. It doesn't matter what color it is. People take that the wrong way.
Right.
And I respect him for working hard, learning English, coming to America, making, you know, what, $200,000 a year, doing municipal bonds, whatever. Great. Not bad for an immigrant. Not bad. And here comes me with everything. I think, sir, I was enabled and sheltered because of the fact that my grandparents realized the mistake they brought upon to the earth. Meaning, I cannot believe that my son will neglect his own kid. And then, of course, my grandmother covers things up. Says, oh, your dad really wanted you. He cried for you. You know, grandma always going to cover up for her son no matter what. You know, you kill somebody, hey, no, don't worry about it. I'm just watering the hose. Everything's fine. No, it's not fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not fine. Everyone has their own defaults. You know, I love them. I have my moments, you know, I want to kill them, you know, like not physically, like, you know, how you say out of anger,
sure.
Oh, God damn it, I want to kill you. But overall, I love them, you know. My dad was very partying guy. My dad in the 80s was fun. It was fun. He bought, you know, he was into that lifestyle. Remember that movie with Michael Douglas, Wall Street? That was him. He was him. He was like another up-and-coming Charlie Sheen. Doing the right thing, you know, not the way we saw him, but just the character was like having fun, moving from crap to good and doing cocaine and drinking, having fun. I mean, I learned, I mistreated someone I really, really loved because I thought it was the right thing to do. And I'm getting a third chance. Believe me, man, I can say this, and I was an asshole. And I'm not afraid to tell you or anyone's listening. I was an asshole. And I'm a bigger man to tell you that I was. I'm gonna say that I shit bigger than you because whatever, or I got a bigger wad because of, no. I want to be honest with the audience and say, you know, I was an asshole and I'm coming forward. I feel guilty, but I'm not guilty. The damage is done. Humpty Humpty sat on the wall. He cracked his egg. No one say sorry to him. He looked for it. He was playing around. He wanted to fall. He knew if he fell, he would crack. But you play with fire. How many times you got to throw yourself in a wall until you realize, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I miss her somewhere I really care about. And she still talks to me today. And I owe her, like, probably so much money. And lately I've been paying it off, you know. I've been paying it because of what I've done wrong. I saw something with my dad. Like, for example, I remember when I was 9 years old, right? He bought this nice Porsche 911 Carrera. Real nice, too, man. We were going to Hamptons. We're going left and right. I knew the old man was doing cocaine and stuff like that. And I knew he was. Because he educated me of the adult life. You know, you know and I know. A nine-year-old guy, kid, shouldn't be watching this shit or knowing about this stuff yet.
Right.
I should be playing with Transformers and action heroes like Ninja Turtles or whatever, Thundercats. I should be playing with that. Even though I had that, I saw these things. And in my movie, I kind of like portrayed somebody that I care about. And I still care about him. I kind of care about him, but I don't love him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wish harm to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grandfather's really old school. You know what he said? He's really,
yeah,
like, not religious, but he thinks old school. It's like, he's born in 1925. He said that something to do with the Bible. He said, you know why you have little girls? Because God punished you because you fucked up so much with women and you mistreated them. Now you're going to know how it feels to have two girls of your own. And you better hope to God that they don't go through what you put other women through. And the only son you got, it's me, it's John. And he didn't come out to be this Messiah, prince, whatever, like you did to follow your own footsteps. I only grasp the evil. I grasp the partying, the this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So at 10 years old, he's having, an affair with a woman named Debbie. And Debbie's good friends with Marianne. So he will date this woman on Friday. And then on Saturday, he will go and have sex with the other one. I mean, it was just amazing to see that. I mean, it's fucked up. But at 9 years old, 10 years old, I'm like, oh, okay. Keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. So I was trained to be like that, a player. Don't be sensitive. Don't cry. You're a pussy if you cry. I was like that. He hit me hard. I mean, I'm talking about Mike Tyson fighting Michael Spinks trying to fight, and I remember that. And I hit it, and my next role model was Rocky. It's like, you know what? If that guy can do it, I'm going after this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm tired of being a punching bag. And every time he said to me, every time I look at you, you remind me of your mother. I fucking hate her. And then I said, you hate me so much, but then tomorrow you're going to drink, or God knows what. You're going to go to the Bible, do the Divine Mercy, and then say, I love you, I'm sorry, blah, 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 and then everything should be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's my dad. What am I supposed to do? I couldn't step up to myself. I couldn't. I was afraid. I'm afraid. And I mean, to this day, I'm afraid what I might do to him, not afraid of his mouth. But I think I was taught to say, back off, don't do anything, because now I'm 36. I'm like, if I hit him, I hurt him, I'm going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hurt him. He taught me a lot of things. He taught me, of course, how to hustle, how to read and write, how to drive, the basic dad thing that you watch on TV. But was he around as much, man? No. He was, they all said, he was working hard to make money. You know what I mean? My grandfather hates the fact that if you weren't ready for a child, why am I here? And I always thought that I am the mistake. We started people who've been abused, we started thinking that we are the mistake. We are the problem. It's not my fault that I was born here. You should have known better. It's like right now, I don't have a pot to piss in. Robbie knows that. I'm starting from scratch. I'm guiding this. I got scripts that I want to give the audience, the world, positive messages, current events. That's going to help me to build a new future tomorrow and say, you know what? I want a family. I worked my ass off. I don't want to just go out tonight and drink my ass away, do a line of coke and some weed, feel great, feel like Superman. Oh, sorry, ma'am, I just got you pregnant, but I'm sorry, I'll pack my bags and leave. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that. I never want anybody to be like that.
Well,
I think, yes, sir.
You're not a mistake. You're a solution.
No,
and you'll find out about it later on. You're starting to understand things, which is the beginning of your life. You're not going to be like that because you understand. But you'll learn that you will. The reason you've been brought up in that situation is you were not a mistake. You were the solution. And when you find that out, which you will soon, the anger is going to stop a little bit. I'm going to bring you to Ken hold on, John. And John, I invite you to call in Friday. We have our Morgan Lawrence, who is our psychologist, and I'm not saying it to be offended, but he may have some good insights too. But I want to thank you for your story. I know you have a lot, and I want to thank you. It took guts. It didn't take a pussy. A pussy shuts their mouth. It took a guts and a real man to express their feelings and not just a story, to have people feel it, because they went through that journey with you. You reached them. You're a good screenwriter.
I really want to open it up. That's why I wrote that film. I really did. And know what I learned through my life? Even though I've been abused and all that, I don't know if I'm right or wrong what I'm about to say. Even though I've been through some shit, Okay, now you're an adult. I have learned, stop blaming others for the mistake. Start blaming you now for the mistake, because now you're 36 or 18 through 36. Mm-hmm. I think now you should be smart enough now to know what's right from wrong. But, again, that's a catch-22. Is it my fault to be enabled? Is it my fault to get everything I wanted by asking? And now when you hit a certain age, it's like, oh, we're going to stop. We're going to cut you off now. Go out there and get a job. Well, whoa, wait a minute here. You told me that I can ask anytime I want. Now, what do I do? Now I got to go and bust my ass, which I don't mind, but I just, it's frustrating because you don't know. The only thing I do know is probably you know, hand labor and then writing with someone and acting. Acting is the best thing I can do because I have so much anger and I can portray in so many characters. You know what I mean? And I still don't have the break on that either. Hopefully one day it would happen. So I decided to write. So I wrote this phenomenal piece to bring out the audience like you're doing today, to tell women and children and young adults and old adults to, it's never too late to say, I'm sorry. And if you hear the song with Michael Jackson, The Man in the Mirror, and it always makes me cry. I don't care what anyone says, but if you look at yourself in the mirror, I might be false too, you know. I've been neglected, pushed down, this and that. I was pushed up and come up again. You know what I mean? Sometimes, yeah. In reality, not in movies. Movies are always a good ending. In reality, sometimes you want to blow your brains out. Do a needle shot. Call it a day. I told someone 4 years ago, I said, I'd rather be dead than suffering. Even though Jesus Christ suffered from the cross, I thought his job was not anyone to suffer. And I said, you know what? I'd rather be dead than suffering. And that's how I looked at it. And I'm here talking to you. I didn't do anything. I just did out of anger. But, man, it feels so close to do it. And I just hope that people are listening and they just don't hide behind those walls like a hermit crab or something and come forward. Because I definitely want to have people to one day hopefully see my movie and say that you're not alone. I mean, we've seen them all. We've seen the Rocky story, the Precious story. We saw, you name them, we've seen them. This time I'm coming out, I'm going to bring out a passive man that realizes his mistakes and let people know that it's okay for what you went through and it's not okay for you other people to do it. We're in a new age. What's next? A 16-year-old kid can do mathematics and takes a 9mm and blows your brains out to your dad because you beat me up? Let's avoid that. Just because you can't do it doesn't mean you can't do it. Don't, like Will Smith said in Pursuit of Happiness, don't let no one tell you that you can't do it because they don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching it, and that made me cry because that's so cool that he said, don't let no one ever tell you can't do it because they can't. And I say, you know what? I can do it. The only obstacle I'm dealing with now is trying to sell to the audience. This is worth your time and your money and to watch it. That's another obstacle I'm dealing with, and Robbie's dealing with probably, and another gentleman Joe dealing with. We trying to get you to get this out there. It's a great message. You know, we all have movies. We have the, you know, 90210 movies. Once in a blue moon, you watch something really good, like a Shawshank Redemption or Jacob's Ladder or something like that, or Good Will Hunting. I think it's overdue. It's time to show the audience that stop picking on kids, stop picking on women because they had a child and you weren't ready. Well, hey, man, you know, two plus two. One hand washes the other, and two hands washes the face.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I was taught. My grandpa taught me that. I just want to bring it out there.
Well, let me say, I mean, you basically you told me that you were born from, you know, an acid reflex poison, and you're going to change somebody's life. And if you didn't have the background that you were brought up in and you didn't survive that background, you're about to do amazing things to change somebody else's life. So when I said you're the solution is you're going to get all of your things out, but when you get them out, somebody's going to read it, somebody's going to pick it up, and you're going to change some people's lives. So you are a solution. John, I want you to hold on. Ken,
sure.
Do you have any advice? You heard John. He talked from the heart and took a lot of courage. When you asked the question in our beginning interview, you're thinking, you know, people want this basic happy ending stuff, the same blah, blah, blah. You just heard from John. They don't want that. You're on the right track. Does that reinforce what you're thinking, that maybe it's time for a change? Maybe they need your real writing about real life. What do you think, Ken?
Oh, of course it does. I want to apologize because I did not want to interrupt John while he was talking in any way, shape, or form.
Right, okay, sir.
You have just as much of a right to be alive and have a life of your own as everyone else on this planet, and I hope you realize that.
I really do.
Because
can you write
you
as well?
Described, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Does Ken write?
Ken is an accomplished author, and he will be a force to be reckoned with in films and TV. And he has a book out right now called Sex and Lies. And Ken and I were talking about before that he's angry, just like you, John. He's angry at the bullshit that's going on and that we have to pretend that the bullshit is real. And Ken will not do that anymore. And by your story, I'm just telling Ken, you just reinforced what Ken was saying. It's like, maybe it's time, Ken. Maybe you don't have to, you know, do that kind of silly writing anymore.
Sex
you're
and
hearing
lies and videotape.
No, not videotapes. No, this one is Sex, Lies, and Rosen Gates. Sex, Lies, and Rosen Gates. But, Ken, does that kind of help you out to know that, you know what, maybe I will take the chance and go forth with what I truly want to write and the passion that and the stories I want to tell by listening to John?
Oh, I'm already doing that. But, John, if I can give you some advice, there are a lot of places, especially on the Eastern Seaboard, that are willing to accept any sort of writing that deals with rage, that deals with abandonment issues, that deals with any of that. One of the guys actually runs a website called Nostrovia to Writing, and that's what he mainly deals with. He mainly deals with any sort of writing that deals with protest, anything that promotes angst. So when you have a chance, check out Jeremiah Walton. His stuff is incredible. He's a poet based out of New Hampshire. So I would recommend that you hook up with him.
I'm going to see what I can do. I'll let my manager know, too, if she will do some work for me, too, and I'll do some legwork, too. Because I definitely, like I said earlier, I'm on your side. And I didn't mean to intervene. I jumped in a little bit because I was wanting to get ready to talk, and I was listening to the other gentleman talk, and I didn't want to just jump in. But,
intervene. I'm terrified.
I agree with you. You know what I mean? I agree with you where to the point where I think everyone should jump in. I'm shocked that, not to be a jerk here, but I'm shocked that no one's calling in, like the other gentleman saying, hold on, we have another caller. Where are you guys? Why you're not listening? I mean, don't be afraid. I'm not afraid. You shouldn't be. You're behind the phone. You take the first step, at least talk. And then if you feel more comfortable, you put yourself out there more visual. I as a consumer, an abuse person, am I going to let it slow me down? Yeah, it's always going to be in my back pocket. It's always going to be in my left brain. That means that I'm going to have to think twice now, more. Just like when I was taught or told that maybe Ken can read 5 minutes faster. Well, I'm going to read 10 minutes or 20 minutes slower than he is. But I'll get the idea, you know. But at least I'll get to his level. I'll get there. Just don't burn the bridge on me and get pissed off and give me the reason to say, you're son of a bitch, you're an asshole, blah, blah, blah. And then when you do that, you burn bridges because people
just
don't understand me.
Just to give
you
a sense of perspective, though, you know that Einstein's teachers thought he was an idiot because he wasn't able to comprehend language all that well.
Exactly, yeah. It's true. I know that. A lot of dyslexic people that were very successful and accomplished things that people needed. Not just to have it. I mean, they needed these things. I concur with what you're saying. And I think
Tom Cruise was dyslexic, too, wasn't he?
Who?
Tom Cruise is dyslexic, too, isn't he?
Yes, he did.
He's manic. And he's very manic.
Well,
exactly.
I think that's more of a product of his fame than it is of his personality.
True.
I guess they don't want another one. I guess I'm almost like that too. I don't know. Ask Robbie. She knows me as a talent more than ever. So I guess
most
I'm like
geniuses,
that. Too.
Most geniuses have some kind of quirk.
Oh, yeah.
Would you agree, Ken? Most geniuses that Benjamin Franklin was not all there. I mean, who's gonna fly?
No.
Who's gonna fly a kite out in a storm? Come on, give me a break.
Right.
But I'm being facetious. But most geniuses, if you look in history, Ken, you may disagree with me, but if you look at the history of the people who changed the way we live, had some. We can go with the great painters, Leonardo da Vinci. We can go with a lot of these painters who hired prostitutes, and half the time when they painted the shit, they were on acid. I mean,
yeah.
We can go with Einstein. Didn't Einstein dabble in LSD, if I remember right? I'm not quite sure. But,
you may have. I haven't read up that much on that part of the story.
You're right, man. But he's right, though. I did a lot of research on people who had the same problems or the same concurrence of what I had. Yeah, I went through drug problems, man. I did coke. I self-medicated myself. I was given Ritalin. I was given Depakote. I was given all tons of drugs because in the 80s, they didn't know what it was. They didn't know what dyslexia disorder. They thought a good kick in the ass would be great. Call me in the morning. That's how I went through it. A nice whip like Indiana Jones. A nice good whip, just like Indiana Jones. Hey, here, after that doesn't work, probe me. So they probed me as a kid, man. They threw me in these machines and check the brain and play with blocks and time me. And he, the doctor would say, look forward. I'm gonna write a number in your back, and you're gonna tell me exactly what it is, and that's gonna determine how your IQ is. Oh, really? Okay, sure.
Well,
yeah,
I went to a person's really defined by a number.
And John, you're a great guy, and I'm gonna let Ken talk to you. But I'm just saying, all you have to do is look at Leonardo da Vinci. Look at that painting. Tell me he wasn't wired right. There's a lot of things going on. And Ken, if you, I'm gonna give you the forum now because you are a guest, and thank you so much for having the patience to listen and to comment on John, because I can hear his pain, I can hear what he's going through, I can hear his confusion, I can hear his indecision, but John doesn't know that he's just starting to create something really good, and I do believe. You were not an accident, John. You were the solution, and you're going to find out about that in the next couple of years. But, Ken, can you comment on something here? Help us out, and because how you see it as an author and a writer.
In terms of insanity playing a role in changing the world?
Right. That's a good one.
I believe it wholeheartedly. I don't think that any sane or rational person would look at the status quo and think it's busted.
Mm-hmm. True.
Well, you become so used to things being a certain way that you start to take it as normal. If that were the case, the Civil War never would have happened. I mean, think about it. That's the way that things were. We should accept it. Slavery, obviously, is helping the economy. Let's keep doing this. It takes somebody who views the situation for what it is, picks it apart, and finally says, I'm not taking this shit anymore. Let's change it. And those people are never considered normal. I'm going to get back to geniuses who have certain quirks. I'm sure you're familiar with David Lynch since you live in L.A.
Which one?
David Lynch.
Oh, great director, great person. I mean, I think he's great. You mentioned somebody, David Lynch. He's a twisted mind. Have you ever seen Mulholland Drive?
Yeah, he is a twisted mind, but that's my point. You need people who see outside the box and who live outside of the confines of what we accept as an everyday occurrence. Every genius or everybody who has had an impact on society has something different about them. I'm not going to necessarily say wrong or disordered in any sense of the word. It's just they have something different. They have something that sets them apart from the common man. John, you and your experiences, that gives you an advantage over most of the people who live within North America.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a huge advantage because now that you've lived through these experiences and you know what you're talking about and you can view these things as firsthand, the ability to translate it becomes that much easier. It starts to become real to an audience, and they'll start to feel it.
My
the
last
conquest. Important.
if I like to interject with you, I mean, that's what I'm saying. My last, when I know that my script, my writing that I put there to help others, I can actually break that mirror. I can say, it's accomplished. I'm happy that I got that far and my message was out there. I'm not talking about some poetry, okay, that's great, or some, you know, some film, whatever. No, I actually, I'm saying, I'm counting the days till I see my film out there to give that message there, sir. I mean, when I see that, I can breathe. I'm like, okay, let's go to the next one. I'm not afraid anymore. Go to the next one.
Well, John, let me tell you something. 2 days ago, I called Bellevue, and they hung up on me. You think you have that.
Bellevue.
Oh, yeah. I called them live, and they put me to the doctor, and they heard me, and she hung up on me. So I couldn't even get into Bellevue. That's how bad I am, John. I'm going to change the world. But, Ken, going back to you, tell us, okay, we're running out of time, and Ken, tell us, I'm going to give you 10, 15 minutes to really give your message out there to America. We do have, believe it or not, and John, we do have a lot of listeners. I just muted everybody because sometimes we hear static in the background, and I want to make sure your message was clear that everybody can hear. But we have over a million listeners, more than a million. I don't want to say the number because it freaks me out, but it's high. So, Ken, please tell me and tell America, including Russia, because they listen to us,
wow,
your message about, oh, yeah, we do. Oh, boy, Russia loves us in India. I just love that, Brian. Yes. I don't even do tech support when he's on. But go ahead, Ken. Tell us your message about your book and what you want to accomplish and what you need.
Oh, what I need is for people to just read the story, give me some sort of honest feedback, and get this thing produced into film before I submit it to a publisher. Again, right now my immediate vicinity is Toronto. That's what I want to aim for because I was born in the area, I was raised here, and I want to give the Canadian industry a shot. Because there are a lot of Canadian directors here, including James Cameron, who the second the South like starts to give them any sort of notice, they bail ship. I do not want to be that guy. But again, if the opportunity comes up, I'm going to take it because I need money, because I want to get Mary Dalva.
Honestly.
Like, and I realize that seems kind of selfish of me, but at the same point in time, I've been with a woman for 7 years. She deserves at least a ring.
She does.
Exactly. Yeah, she does. I agree with him, too. You're not greedy, sir. I think you should go and do it. Do what you got to do. In this world, it's all about greed, so why not have your piece of the pie, too, with a good positive message? I'm with you all the way. I support you.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm a communist or a socialist, but again, keep in mind that I live in Canada, and it is kind of a socialist country. I don't want to succeed for myself. That's not the purpose of this project. I want to succeed for the sole purpose of having somebody else read my stuff, decide that it's shit, and then take the action to do better.
I agree.
That's what I want.
Hmm. So you're challenging them, John. Ken, you're challenging them, aren't you? You're saying,
the world
look
needs
at
to
my...
be challenged.
Yeah, but you're challenging with your work. Look at my work. All right, give me your best shot. Tell me a shit, I dare you. Is that what you're really saying, Ken?
It's not so much that I want them to tell me that it's shit. I want them to show me. Mm-hmm. I want them to do better, and I want them to succeed me. Because that's what the world is missing. We're missing that competitive nature. We've become so embroiled in this idea of positivity and supporting each other, which I'm totally for. I will support every writer, every artist, every poet, everybody out there, because I want them to succeed. But right now, my primary focus is to get ahead in life, to have somebody else prove that they're better than I am. Because we need that. We need that, especially in North America, because I feel that we've lost that edge.
I know where you're coming from. You can't fool me. You know right. You're the best. You know you're the best, and you're challenging them. You prove me wrong that I'm not the best. That's basically what I'm getting from you. Is that true?
I don't
think so. Like, maybe that's how I'm coming across. And if that's the case, I apologize.
No, I think you're right.
I am filled with self-doubt.
No, but I think you're right. Because only an artist that has enough security and power and believe in their work will make such a challenge. And that means you're good. Because there's a lot of people who are insecure and they say, here's my work. Okay, be careful. You're saying, I want you to read it and you show me or you make it better. Because I'm thinking in the back of your mind going, you can't, you little bastards. I'm freaking good. But if you can, show me. And because basically what you're doing is challenging their intellect. Am I correct?
It's not that I'm challenging their resolve, because we have more critics than we have authors right now. We have more critics out there than we have anybody producing art or producing anything of value. And it's easy to be a critic. It's easy to look at something and say, oh, I hate this. I can do better. But if you don't make the attempt to do better, it's just lip service.
That's true. Well, there's nothing wrong with lip service. I mean, I pay my good money. But I understand what you're saying. But tell people how they get a hold of you. Challenge those people. I challenge all you producers out there, publishers out there. This is the guy. Prove him wrong. That's all he wants. And if you prove him wrong, he'll learn from it. But if you don't, you got yourself a great client, because this guy is going to burn up. I would read your book just to know that you want me to say, tell me Brian is shit. Well, okay, I'm going to read it. I can't wait to tell you. I would just read it for that. But I know you got good work. I know you got good
work.
Well,
I know that Tracy probably sent a copy to you guys prior to the interview.
I didn't get it, and that's why I'm kind of – usually I will look at it. I will talk about it. I asked Kelly. I'm going to put her on the phone right now. Oh, she's here. Kelly? Oh, Kelly says she didn't get it either. But that's why I'm at a disadvantage. She didn't get it. But I'm going to get it, and I'm going to talk about it tomorrow. And we have a large listening group, and you coming on, and Johnny Rock here, and Rock and Robbie, who's still at the Hard Rock Cafe, which our event is not going to be for another 5 months, but she's still partying. She has a lot of people, too. So I'm going to talk about your book. I'm going to talk about what a good man you are. I like you because I can identify with you. And we'll get it going. And this is a show, this is a platform that anytime you want to come on and talk about negative stuff, we are the show that'll do it, buddy. We are the negative show. No show like ours. But, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening. How do you pronounce your last name, Ken?
It depends. In Greece, it would be Alexopoulos. In North America, we just say Alexopoulos because it's easier.
Okay. Alex Opolopoulos. Okay, Ken.
Sorry.
Once in a while, it's okay.
I made the mistake of calling me Alex the whole show.
Yeah. We're going to have to do something when you get to Hollywood. We'll call you Bert. But, Ken, tell people once again, how do people get a hold of you if they're interested in your work and to network with the big guys, because they're hearing this too. We got a lot of people listening to the show who are in the studios and producers and directors and so on and so forth, screenwriters, publicists. Of course, nobody's better than Tracy, but we have people listening. So once again, please tell them how to get a hold of you.
Well, if you just want to get a hold of me to hang out online, you could just get me through Facebook. Or if you really want to read the stuff, just approach Tracy. You know that she has all the material ready. But other than that, I'm pretty low-key. I don't like to make a huge spectacle of myself. And you're actually really lucky because I broke my interview cherry a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, this would have been a very awkward process for both of us.
Don't underestimate me, my friend. I had over crying. All right, buddy. Ladies and gentlemen, Ken Alex. Is that okay?
That's fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, sir. And John, thank you. We're going to open up the mic so everybody can say goodbye once again, and then we're going to get right back to Johnny Rock. Okay, really quickly.
Thank you so much.
You guys, 504, who's on 504? 504? 428? Okay. John, do you have a parting statement or a comment for Ken before he leaves?
I just want to read your book, and maybe it will do my final touches of my own upbringing and my own wild thinking as well. Hopefully you will. I hope that you succeed, and you know, and I see you shine as well. I wish you nothing but the best. I'm on your
same
side.
To you.
Remember that. I really,
I've
I'm
been
on
looking
your
forward
side.
To reading your work too. If you ever have the opportunity to pass it over.
Well, if again, if Robbie's listening and she's the control, she's the manager, so if she thinks that it's suitable to read it, contact Robbie. She's there. She has a synopsis and treatment and log lines and the whole nine yards. It's up to you. I mean, you got my permission to do it. You know, I mean, it's up to her to read it to say okay.
Sounds great, John. That's a good step.
Permission yet.
That's a great step, John. Wow. Good neck. You just networked with the great Kent. That is pretty damn good. 504-345. I'll hit you again. Are you here?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, hey, Ellen. Nice to meet you. Ellen
yeah.
is with us. Ellen, do you have a statement or an exit question?
No, I'm just admire, you know, John for coming out with, you know, his situation and his story. And for Ken, I can't wait to read your book. It sounds
Thank
really,
you.
Really interesting.
There you go.
Thank you.
There you go. Hey, Ken, I got a book coming out called Child Rearing. It's a story. Excuse me. As little Penn State is a little Penn State incident. Excuse me. Has a nice shower scene in it. All right, fine. We'll talk later. Yeah, I know. Jesse.
All righty, then.
Yeah, all righty. Jesse, the jackhammer. Do you have a question and final statement, exit question?
I don't know. It could be reality or it could be sincerely.
Well, Jesse, did you hear our comments? And then did you hear Sex Lies and the Rosen Gates? And this is by Ken Alexopoulos.
You don't run around chasing women without any panties on.
Okay, that's a good comment, and that's our PSA announcement. Thank you, Jesse. Okay. Thank you, Ken, very much. We're going to say goodbye to Ken. Ken, come back anytime. I want to thank Tracy, who I think is one of the best publicists around. Tracy, thank you so much for introducing us to your great clients. I mean, she has so many great clients, and Ken is one of them. Thank you, sir, and safe travels, and I will read your book, and I will make a comment.
Thank you. Well,
you're welcome, sir. Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for letting me ramble on for about 2.5 hours. And
it's a pleasure.
I look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you. And you know what, Ken? You can go away knowing that you helped someone. You heard the stories with John, and you heard the stories with Johnny, and you were so nice. You took your time, and you were so nice to talk to people. And that warms my heart. You're one of the best. Thank you so much, sir.
No, it's nothing. People deserve to know they have support.
Yeah, and it's very important. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Ken Alexopoulos. Thank you, sir. I tried, Ken.
It's okay. You got it right this time.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Keep that applause going for another 10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And Kelly Corbin, you're with us. Ken hasn't left. Do you have a statement?
No, I just really enjoyed the whole interview. This was a different type of an interview, a lot of dark and deep conversation, and I just really enjoyed sitting back and listening to it. I'm glad you came on, Ken.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Well, I appreciate you, and I can't wait to see your books come out too. When do you suspect they will be out? I mean, what's your plans right now down the road?
In terms of the written portion of it, again, I want to hit about 90,000 words. That should be done within about a month and a half unless I have a distraction. After that,
okay.
I'm going to submit it to publishers locally, and if they pick it up, who knows? I'm expecting that the written portion will be done within a year, but my primary focus right now is to get it out to film developers, specifically within Southern Ontario and Toronto. mm-hmm. that I can have this thing presented in a visual medium so that I don't get screwed out when a publisher picks it up and tells me I have to use specific companies.
Right, right. Well, good luck to you on that. And if there's anything we can help you with, let us know.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And we're going to take a good break now. I mean, this is a great interview. The rest of the show, if you're listening, is going to go downhill from here. But I'm a negative person, too. So.
Kelly, it's up to us to keep it upbeat.
True. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And don't forget, Larry Rust, who was with Iron Butterfly, had the pleasure to sing with him in the Garden of Eden. Anyway, he has a cause called Musician Against Abuse. And here's a PSA.
Hello, this is Larry Rust, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com. Hello, my name is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, 1999 to 2005, and you are listening to Brian the Hammer Show on BT Radio.
Come on, let's get busy.
Come on, let's get busy. Get impressed. Get engaged. Get connected.
With Media Pro Productions.com.
You bring the script. We turn on the lights. We produce the action.
Lights, camera, action. With red carpet satisfaction.
Media Pro Productions.com.
And that's Media Pro Productions. If you're interested in doing a demo or anything like that, contact Media Pro Production, and you can reach Carrie, who's in charge of that. She's a member of MVP, too. You can catch her on Facebook, Carrie Brooks. Go on Facebook, ask her about Media Pro Production. If you are an actor and you're looking for a demo reel, or you're a business owner and you're looking for a little commercial, those are the people you contact. Johnny Rock and Robbie Drop, but I got a feeling they're still listening. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to talk about the IWMAs, and Johnny Rock is going to be emceeing it. While they come back in, while we're waiting for them to come back in, I want you to listen to Johnny Rock stand-up. And ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Rock.
My daughter called me today. She says, Dad, can you send me $100? I said, $50? What do you need $20 for? I was invited to run a marathon earlier today, and I decided not to do it, and then they told me that it was for handicapped and blind people. I said, oh, well, I could win that. You know, they see that animals make different sounds, and, you know, depending on where they're from. Like say, for instance, dogs in Korea make a sizzling sound. You ever wonder if camels look at their toes and go, I wish I didn't have pussy feet. I just want to say, there's no urinals in there, nothing but a bunch of rude women. You know, they call me Barry White. You know why, huh? You know why they call me Barry White? Because I'm very, very white. You can tell by the way I walk. Hey, how's it going? Oh, they said, Rodney Dangerfield, Rodney Dangerfield. Rodney's trying to be English. Even as a kid, I was ugly. On Halloween, I had to trick-or-treat over the phone. How many of y'all remember Wolfman Jack? Does anybody? One? Wolfman Jack was a legendary radio DJ from the 50s. And so I'm going to do this for you, sir. Can you hear me? In a recent survey, people asked if rock and roll music affected their hearing. 10% said yes. 13% said no. And everybody else just didn't hear the question. Well, if you didn't get that one, you sure ought to get this one. Let me ask you a question. Who gave Johnny Cash? Who gave any money? Who gave Robert De Niro? Is Jack Black? Is Clint Black? Is Bobby Brown? Was James Brown? Is Vanna White? Is Betty White? Why is Shirley Temple black? Did Tammy Faye Baker? Did Tina Turner? Or did she flip Wilson? Why was Faye Dunaway? Who did William Hurt? Who did Chevy Chase? Who did Wolfman Jack? What gave Bob Hope? Who did Lucille Ball? Did Cher Dick Clark? Would Madonna Dick Van Dyke? Natalie Wood? Who would Dan Rather? Who gave Demi Moore? Who gave Roger Moore? At what school is Victoria Principal? Who died? Who died and made Don King? Why is Rodney King? Would that make Freddie Prince? Was Marvin gay? Is Dave gay? Is it was straight? All of these things make Stevie wonder. You're a great audience. Thank you very much.
Oh, look at that. Johnny, you it off, buddy.
Go ahead and hit the website up at abovegroundcomedy.com.
There you go, everybody. The great Johnny Rock. And Johnny will be appearing at the IWMAs. That's right, we're going to be there September 21st. I will be there. You will be there. I'll be on the radio show a week before promoting the event, talking to the locals. I could talk Southern, y'all. So I will blend in. I will make the yokels love me. You know, like I said, we're going deep in the South. I'm black, so the first thing going to come out of my mouth is, where are white women? I'm sure I would be a big hit there. Kelly, I'm out of the studio, so you have command of the studio, and I can't get back in. Are you with me?
I'm here.
All right. I don't know who's still here, but I have a recipe. Is Ellen still here?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. This is Ellen. This is a tribute to the Deep South that we're going into. You know, I've been worried about going to Mississippi, Alabama. You know, I'm worried about that. I don't think they like black people there.
Why are you worried about Alabama? You're not going anywhere near Alabama.
I don't know.
Louisiana, Mississippi.
How far is Louisiana from Alabama?
It's like two states away.
Yeah. They crawl. I heard those Southerners. I'm going to be out there, you inbreds.
Oh, my God. You know, that's going to get you killed. You
I know. I don't think I'm going to last long. So I am going to be on the radio show out there in Louisiana. That's right. The Hammer's coming to Louisiana, and I'm going to do what station am I going to be on? Ellen?
WDSO 990 AM. Yeah, and I can see Rudy with his paper bag right now.
That's right. What's the call letters one more time? Because I'm coming there.
WDSO 990 AM.
WGSO 990 AM.
Mm-hmm.
And for you Southerners, AM means ass meat. I am coming out there.
It does not. I can hear that bag going in and out. Really, really.
I'm
going
to try to behave. I'm going to try to behave myself, but for you Southerners, I'm going to talk very slow.
Oh my God, Kelly, he's going to end up getting killed.
See, I'm telling you, I can see my death right now. I'm going to bring John with me.
There's not going to be.
And then I'm
going to
bring Ken with
it.
Me. I'm going to bring John and Ken with me, so we can be we relate to each other. Yeah, I'm not used to going into the southern area. Kelly, you're going to be with me, aren't you?
Am I going to what?
You're going to be with me, aren't you?
Not near. I'll be there.
No. Okay.
But I'm
all
not
right.
Standing near you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Kelly and I will be on the other side. We'll be in the...
You try to hide behind me. Are you kidding?
Huh?
He'd try to hide behind me if I was standing too close.
Oh. You're damn right. I don't want to make sure the bullets hit me. I'm going to write about how you died courageously.
Uh-huh.
Saving a black man's life. You're going to be a hero in the NAACP, Kelly, after the story I write about you.
Oh, yeah? Great.
But, yes, I'm going on to be on the radio, you guys. I'm coming to your town. The Hammer is going to be on your local radio. I got how much time do I have, Ellen? About an hour?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the IWMAs. Hopefully, Johnny, I can give away some T-shirts and Johnny Rock's T-shirts. Hopefully, I can give away a couple of tickets to the IWMAs and get you local yokels involved. I can speak your language, you little knotheads. And
remember,
so what I'm going to do. Oh, Jesse, you got to come. You're my bodyguard.
That's right. I've been trying to say that for over an hour or more.
That's right, because Jesse lives in the South. You're in West Virginia, right, Jesse?
And you're North, West Virginia.
Okay, well, that's still South, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
All right, well, you speak their language.
My ass is going to be there still.
All right, well, you speak the language. You got to protect me, because sometimes there's a misunderstanding. So I got my speech ready. And
T-shirts too to the raffle.
That's right. And you know the people in the South don't wear clothes, so they need those T-shirts.
What do you mean they don't wear clothes?
Well, what? They don't wear no shoes.
No, well,
they don't
okay,
wear no
that, sh- that's true. That's true, because I'm always on Erin about, you know, wearing shoes on her feet. I call her
that's
my little hillbilly child.
Exactly. Exactly. So we know what we're dealing with. I'm coming from California, and it's going to be weird talking to people with three eyes, and they speak backwards.
Three eyes?
Well, you know, the inbreding thing. Let's ignore it. Don't bring it to their attention.
Okay, they don't have inbreds in Louisiana. Maybe
Are you
in the
sure?
Maybe in the bayou?
In the bayou? In the bayou? All right, well, there's one. You're not helping your case here, Ellen, about the South.
Hey, you know, I live in the suburbs, okay?
Oh, okay.
I guess well, you're not going to come loaded.
What?
I guess I'm going to come loaded, won't I, now? Just shit all that.
You're going to have to, you're right. I'm going to pick up my bulletproof vest next week, put my order in. And for you people in the South, I come with gifts. What we're going to do is I'm going to get there Thursday, and I'm going to do the radio show. I'm doing a radio show Friday, Ellen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm doing it, and after they hear me on the radio, I'm going. Yeah, really, to storm the station.
You know, the bad part about that is, the bad part about
for me on him.
The bad part about that is, it's in the heart of downtown New Orleans.
Really?
Oh.
Is that good, or is that southern New Orleans? Is that?
No, that's like, okay, that's like New Orleans, New Orleans.
Huh.
No, the station's actually not that far from the French Quarter, so.
All right. You hear this, Kelly?
I hear that.
Yeah. See how excited she's going? She's looking forward to going to the South.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly and I from MVP are going to make nice to the South. What we're going to do... I didn't know we were at war with them, but they still don't know the Civil War is over. Easy, Kelly. They're running around with their rebel flags and everything, and they're still worrying, you know, going talking about Ulysses Grant. I don't know what's going on there.
Hey, I have to live here.
Yeah, well, I'm going on the air there, so look for a new place to live. You got 3 months.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Rudy, look, I'm going to blindfold myself and I'm going to point to somewhere.
You're going to have to point to it. I'm going to introduce you. I want to thank Rudy Dixon and Ellen Dixon for bringing me on the radio, y'all. So, here's how we have to make. We have to make peace with the Southerners. Right, Kelly? So what I decided...
Don't make war with them and I won't have to make peace with them.
Oh, you're a traitor. Don't make war with them and we don't have to make peace with them. What kind of logic is that? That doesn't,
let's just go
that
party
doesn't
with
really
them.
Party with the Southerners?
Yeah.
Okay,
hey,
then they'll bring their cut.
New Orleans is a big party place, okay?
Yeah.
All you have to do is party with the New Orleanians.
Yeah, well, I don't want to drink out of their jugs. You don't know what they got. But anyway, here's what we're going to do to make nice with the Southern backwards people. But what did I say? Okay. I could tell this radio show, you must listen to see if I survive the end of this broadcast. Hey, this is the Hammer. Yes. Hello, South people.
So
you're blind the Hammer Jackson, right?
Yeah. No, I'm going to say for that day, hello, I'm Jesse the Jackhammer. But,
No, you're going to have Uncle Si come on. I'm just,
yeah,
right?
No shit. Wee doggy. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make nice, so we're going to get to their heart. So in the Hard Rock Casino, I think, let me know if Robbie comes in. I'm not even in the studio. So if Robbie comes in, let me know, because I actually made this segment for her and Johnny Rock, but I guess they left. Robbie is nailing down our venue at the Hard Rock Casino. I'm just going to say that word. She's there talking to people, and she's been there for 2 days now talking to people. And our event is not until another 4 months away. Party on, girl. So here's what we're going to do. Oh, shit. We're going to, it's 90 seconds. You got to have to stay through the podcast and listen to this. We're going to make redneck turtle burgers. That's what we're going to do.
What?
Yes. And here's what you need. We're going to 2 pounds of ground beef round, two tablespoons of minced fresh chives, 1/2 tablespoon of salt, 1/4 tablespoon of Worcestershire, 1/4 tablespoon of dry mustard, 4 slices of sharp cheddar cheese, 1/2 cup of chopped sweet onion, 12 regular-sized hot dogs, cut them in half crossways, and 12 slices of bacon. We're going to need you to bring that because we're making redneck turtle burgers.
And they
make the hot dogs look like little feet sticking out of the bun like you're eating somebody. It's like a little redneck.
Oh,
so,
I haven't seen that. I've seen that recipe.
Redneck turtle burgers. Google it. Come to the show, and we'll make sure we serve y'all. You feel like home.
Y'all.
I want to make sure you bring your crawl moms and your crawl dads.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Brian, we're not all rednecks. We are not all rednecks.
Oh, there's Robbie.
Yeah, I told you she just came back in. You hear that? We're not all rednecks.
Well, wait, we're going to go into podcast. I'm glad she's here because I'm not in the studio. And when we go on podcast, a lot of people get us on podcast. That's where most of our people. So don't think that we're in podcast. Nobody's listening to us because we found out that when we do party and podcast, people are listening. Welcome, Robbie.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello, Craw Mom and Craw Dad.
Yeah, I had a meeting with the Hard Rock, so I had to leave you earlier. I must have been on mute because you weren't hearing me that I had to go, so I just went. She loves our new mission statement. It's awesome. Thank you very much, whoever put it together.
Kelly
and,
Corbin.
Kelly, it was totally incredible. I don't know. Maybe I want you to help me put the sponsorship package together. You have a way with words. You really do.
She does. She is the best. When Kelly does that shit, I stay away. She is the best.
I tried to make a mission statement, and it looked so pitiful compared to yours. It's like, mine is the best. And yours is just bad. I love your writing. You're an excellent writer. You really are.
Well, thank you very much, Robbie.
You're going to undo everything that I said. You're worthless. Thank you, Robbie.
And I took a tour downstairs to the pool and the hot tub.
Uh-huh.
And they have ping pong tables there. We need to have a ping pong contest Saturday when everybody's here.
You've been partying. I love Robbie. Robbie's partying there. Hey, they got a ping pong table.
They have two ping pong tables. They have speakers underwater in the pool. They have a hot tub. You can look over the Mississippi Sound. It's just beautiful. It really is. I can't wait to share it with all of you guys.
You know, it's funny,
awesome.
Robbie, because I like to swim, and I can figure that if I'm in that pool and it's warm and I'm hearing Mississippi music piped into the water, I'm thinking I'm in a pot and they're boiling me.
No, that is very true, but it is rock and roll music all day.
Oh, okay.
It's rock and roll.
Okay, I'll get that out of my head.
I got a challenge for you, Brian. A ping pong drinking contest.
Hey, I like it.
Yeah, whoever wins gets to drink. The losers don't get to drink.
Yeah.
Everybody drinks, but it's who falls on their ass first get drunk.
Robbie, that means you, me, and Kelly, we're going to throw the game. We're going to watch Brian get drunk off his ass.
I'm going to win. I'm going to be drunk. Competition is on. Let me
explain something. You get me drunk and I have a paddle in my hand and there's a woman near me, ping pong's on. Think about it.
Yep.
You play at your own risk.
Thing you're thinking about, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be fun. Robbie, tell us more. Really, is Johnny Rock with you?
I don't know. Is he here, Johnny? No. No, he's not with me. He's in the.
Okay. Well, we played his stand up, and he was funny. He was very funny. Please let him know that we did that, and please let him know that he was really inspirational. Like I said, I'm not in the studio, so I don't know who's here. But John, your client, he was
John
unbelievable.
John Loretto, yes.
He's unbelievable.
He really is, and all of that stuff, he lived that stuff. The dyslexia and all of that, his movie, it's really about his life. He didn't really say that, but it really is. When I took him on as a client, I'm an agent, I'm not a manager, but he had an agent that said, you need a manager. So I took him on as his manager because he needed to learn proper etiquette and protocol and everything else. And he is such a sponge, and he has come so far in his life since I've taken on the project of telling him how to do things the right way and teaching him the right way. And he's just an amazing guy, and he's an amazing writer, everything he's gone through. And you can see why he's a good writer, because he never stops talking. He doesn't. I think doesn't stop talking is when he's asleep.
He probably talks in his sleep, but he has a lot to say. And I'm gonna see everything. And Johnny wasn't here to hear it. And I'm gonna go with Johnny. I'm gonna try to get there at Thursday. I'm gonna go with Johnny and visit some of the shelters that are really dear to his heart regarding child abuse and sexual abuse. And of course, with Larry's campaign with the trafficking to stop to make. human trafficking
yes.
awareness. I'm going to go there and visit a lady that Ellen knows that runs this chapter regarding that. And we're going to visit some shelters. And we're going to hand out some Johnny Rock t-shirts and some Jesse the Jackhammer t-shirts. And hopefully we'll have something with, you are the MVP. Don't think that you're not, because you're the MVP.
Yes.
And,
we have two shelters, one in New Orleans. It's called Lisa's House,
mm-hmm.
that Melissa did a documentary on, and she was a prostitute in the human trafficking, and she takes in women. So I feel that her organization would probably be the best one in New Orleans. I will do more research and give you information on that. And then we have the Hope Haven over here in Mississippi, which is for women and children shelter for abuse. So, you know, I'm going to work on getting those two as who we're going to sponsor here. I think both of those, one from Louisiana and one from here, would be perfect.
And we're going to start calling them live and introduce ourselves and let them know that we're behind them and we're going to make a difference on this and do it right, and hopefully we make them proud. And we'll get those. That's why I'm going on the show. What's the station again, Ellen?
It's WGSO 990 AM.
WGSO 990 AM. AM stands for Ass Meat, y'all. I'm working myself up.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that's why Rudy's got the brown paper bag right now, okay? He's going to be hyperventilating into it. And, you know, I keep telling him, look, you know, it'll be fine. And he looks at, have you heard his show?
Well, we're going to have Robbie, you're going to be at the radio station. Kelly's going to be at the radio station. Jesse will be there. Ellen will be there. We're going to all be there.
I'll be down the street.
Yeah, you'll be down the street. We're all going to be
sending you in with Rudy that day.
Huh?
Just you and Rudy.
No, you guys are going to be there to support us.
No, it'll just be you and Rudy.
Yeah. No, somehow I think it's going to be that SNL thing when Alec Baldwin was on there about his sweaty balls.
His sweaty balls.
Yeah. I'm going to bake something for them.
Yeah, Rudy already said that he's coming up with all kinds of, you know, little sound bites for you. So.
Wow. See,
well,
I know.
Huh? His favorite.
Oh, yeah. And Robbie, you're going to be there. I need you there most because you're going to do the most of the talking, because Robbie sounds nice and make people sound really good about themselves and explain about the program and get the Yoko Nokos there. And then we'll all talk.
I'll be there. Don't worry.
We're going to have fun.
I think we need to have a pool party Saturday, have ping pong tournament, and have a hula hoop contest.
After we take the shots.
Well, they have a bar. They have a bar right next door to the ping pong table. That's not a problem.
Yeah. We'll find Kelly in a hookah room. Where's Kelly? No, it's hula, Kelly. Hula, not hookah.
I'll see you guys when you're done.
Yeah, really. I'm in a smoke shop. No, Kelly is hula. Yeah, well.
In the back there in the video camera.
Yeah, I know. Are we back in Kansas yet? No. You're not in Kansas anymore. We're in the South, Kelly.
Poppies.
Yeah, really, the poppies. Toto? Toto? There's no Toto here. We're
going to
have fun.
Juicy.
Yeah. We're going to have fun, and I hope that radio station will forgive us, and so we will write an apology letter before.
I have to tell you this. Okay, Rudy's boss, you're not going to believe what his boss's name is. His boss's
what?
Name
oh,
is
no.
Barry, too. Chris Barry.
Oh, his boss is Chris Barry? Wow.
Yeah, huh. That's what his boss's name is.
We're going to have to write some jokes about him. Yeah.
Well, we'll bring Chris Barry, our Chris Barry, along with us then. He's there. He lives there.
Oh, is he there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lives in New Orleans.
Oh, I didn't know he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
That's where Nick both used to live, but Nick moved back east.
Well, he's a movie star. Yeah.
But, yeah, he does all of his films in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know how Chris is. He's a little shy. He goes, me appearing with Brian? I got a career.
No, Chris loves you.
Well, are you ready for this, Robbie? Are you excited?
I am. I'm on fire. I was talking to Adrian yesterday, and he said, you sound like you're really excited about all this. I said, I'm on fire. I'm not excited. I'm on fire. There's a difference.
The girl is on fire. Well, you
I
know.
I am on fire.
So where are we standing now? You said you had a meeting and they left the mission
statement
and all.
Yeah, I took her all that, and she loved it. And I really need to work, get this sponsorship package together. Bubba's coming over. Adrian is coming over tomorrow. We're going to put stuff together, but I would love to get you in on it to put our letters together that we need to put in our package, you know, for the sponsorship. Mel was going to help me, but she's having computer problems at this point. And she's, like, beside herself with no computer, if you can imagine. She has 5 hard drives getting information from because her main hard drive crashed. Luckily, most of her stuff is on separate hard drives everywhere, you know. But she had to go last night. She's and today looking for a new computer. So I need to get to work before she gets all. It's going to be a few days before she can get all that set back up. And I need to get to work on that today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
When do you want to start selling tickets? Since we confirm that's where we're going to go. Right now we're just making a better, sweeter deal.
Yes. Miss Lindsay said just as soon as we get, you know, because I asked her about that, I wanted to start promoting it. She said, as soon as we get the contracts and everything and done, well, you can promote away. So we really need to wait until she's given all of that information to Vince today. So I'll either hear from her by 5 o'clock or I'll hear from her tomorrow. She knows I'm
okay.
here. So.
I mean, because another thing is, as soon as you get all this done, it would be good, you know, to start getting commercials together to promote down here and in Mississippi.
Yes. Yes, we need that desperately.
Well, that's where we have Carrie. As soon as we get all that done, Carrie could put us a couple of 15-second spots together regarding the IWMAs. That's why we handpicked the best of the best, because each person is fantastic in their own area. Carrie will cut us a great commercial regarding the IWMAs.
Good. Yeah, we need that for the radio stations, and if there's possibly she could do a 15 or 30-second video clip, you know, we could probably get it on the news, a lot of the news stations, especially here in the Mississippi, they like stuff like that, and they promote it for us.
And don't forget, we already have Larry Rush's thing. Let me see with him with the IWMAs. Let me see if I can find that, because that's a great one from Larry Rush. Rust, I'm sorry. How you doing with Larry? Because I know you guys are having great conversations almost every day. You guys are almost like best friends now.
Well, I emailed him all this stuff, and I'm waiting for him to call me, and we're going to talk about it, and you know, go from there. And he doesn't know that I've been doing the research for the two shelters, the Hope Haven and Lisa's house. So I'm going to talk to him today about all that. So he'll be excited, you know, to hear that I've found two places. He wants to donate the money directly to them instead of putting it in his organization and starting to spread it out. He wants to give it to them on the spot, so we'll give them a big check on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Lisa will be here herself and accept her award or check, and also from Hope.
Which one is Lisa?
She's with Lisa's house. She's the
Lisa's one of the people at the shelters. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, and we're going to call them. Now. Okay, we're going to call them and introduce ourselves and get them some publicity. And you know what? You can send your people this, Robbie, at the Hard Rock Casino. Send them this. Listen.
Hello, my name is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, 1999 to 2005. And I support the IWMA, that's the Independent World Music Awards, on the Brian the Hammer Show on BT Radio. And I am offering a prize of being on the bill of a Musicians Against Abuse benefit concert in a town near you in the United States.
There you go. Send her that audio file so you can sort of juice behind us and the IWMA. It gives us the credibility and the legitimacy that we need, that we
right,
already
and
have.
We will pick a band for his project to play here. He can pick whoever he wants to play here. You know, I'm sending him clips right now of local artists in the area, so we're working on that.
Wow, it's going to be big. I love it. And have you ever met?
Another thing
we need.
Go ahead. Anybody?
I want to speak.
Huh?
Oh, Johnny says he's still on. Are you listening, Johnny? But Johnny must be muted.
No.
No. Wait a minute. No, we're in podcast. So if he called within the next 5 minutes, he won't be able to come on. Unless you three-way him.
Okay, I can probably do that.
Okay, while you do it, I want to introduce, we talk about Rudy. Rudy is Ellen's husband who worked in a radio station that we're going to be appearing locally. He has given us so much support. He was also one of our judges to help judge the musical act. That's Rudy Dixon. He has our complete trust. We put our fate in his hands because he's very capable. I admire his work. He knows about musicians and also how radio works. And I just want to remind you, just in case if you don't know who Rudy is, I'm gonna play something so they'll introduce you to who Rudy is. Here we go.
Oh my God.
Money is Mr. Belfort. I didn't do anything.
You don't know
why.
He's lying to his fucking teeth.
Let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the beginning, right? You invited some friends over, right?
Yes.
One thing led to another. Things got out of hand. We understand that we do blow all the time. We're fucking degenerate.
This is a little party Rudy attended,
right?
And we had the microphone there.
Right from my sock drawer. All right.
Like I said, I don't know where your money is.
Just start from the beginning. Who came over?
It was just a normal day. I knew you were coming home the next day, so everything would be fine. It would be cleaned up. I got a little high at breakfast.
Right.
So I got a little happy. I had some eggs. I had a little bit of ice cream. And then I said, who do I know that likes ice cream? My friend Rudy. So I called
who's
Rudy.
Who's Rudy? Yeah, who's Rudy? Who's Rudy?
You know who Rudy is. Come on.
You know who Rudy is?
I don't fuck.
You
who
know,
fuck is Rudy?
I don't know
you
anyone.
You know, last
Rudy.
Month, the Lollipop Club, you know who Rudy was.
you know Rudy? I don't know if I fucking know any. What do you mean?
Rudy.
So he went to the Lollipop Club?
Oh, he was at the Lollipop Club for sure, on the stage, grinding with everybody.
I got fucked up. I like to dance. I don't know. I maybe.
And that's Rudy. Rudy likes a little ice cream, and he likes to dance at the Lollipop Club.
Yeah. And this is why you're not safe when you do the radio.
I know it. I'm going to fucking kill him.
Hey, Brian, I got a question.
Yes.
Is there any way I can get a big part in this with you all? Maybe, I don't know, anything I can do? I'm going to go with you.
Well, Jesse, you're coming.
We'll find something. Just let me think about it. Thank you for volunteering. You will be here as bodyguard, that's for sure. But yeah,
that's for damn sure. You got to keep me out of trouble, Jesse.
He's mine too. He's mine too. Two armored vest. He says.
Yeah. See, because Jesse speaks their language. Because I feel like I'm going into a different country.
What's up?
Yeah. Yeah, Jesse, you're coming with us, and Robbie has his whole day planned. I mean, with the auction, and we have the whole day there. So, and you're going to be up. Go ahead, Robbie. I'm sorry.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, so I'm sure she has, Robbie's going to put you to work, trust me, on this one.
I have to be a judge or something. If y'all's going on stage and make announcements to the next group coming out or whatever, I'd be willing to go out with somebody doing that on the stage or being a judge or something. You know, a career is a career when you're looking to
achieve
your dream.
Yeah, our judges are musicians themselves, so... Mm-hmm.
that's out. But, and we have our NCs, but we'll find something, don't worry.
I was a manager for a gentleman that Brian knows real well. I was a manager for a guy that he was a, he writes his own stuff and produces his own stuff. So, but he won't, he's never been out in the world, traveled around his, so.
Hey, Jesse, and you get paid.
Hey, yeah, brother, what's up with you?
Wait a minute, Brian, you're already giving our money away. He volunteered, and you're already talking about pain. I'm teasing.
We have another big thing that we need to talk about. Speaking of the auction, we need to start deciding when we're going to start getting this stuff together, where it's going to be sent to, because we need one central location for all this
stuff.
Oh,
there you go. That's a good point.
Okay, well, I
Robbie.
Do have a place. Central is 30 minutes from the Hard Rock Casino. I have a home. We can send everything there. And I have a dining room that's empty, so we can, you know, work, put it there. I feel it's the best place. It's close and easy to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly's husband was so nice. He has a lot of connection in the sports world. He and he is donating some stuff for the auction, too. And, D-Town. D-Town is a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
So he's donating a lot of stuff. So thank you so much, Kelly, for allowing us to do that. It's really nice of him. He's already a nice guy, but for him to go out of his way and support this event, you know, Kelly's life is like it's like Father Knows Best. And but we'll get her drunk and we'll get the real story. But they are. I'm jealous of them. And Kelly made a point. I said, you know, Kelly, would we like to go out to dinner? She goes, well, I don't mind going out to dinner with Cindy. And I said, well, how about me? She goes, I don't know. And so, she did say that too.
Getting back to the auction and the silent auction and raffle stuff, you know, I don't want to say my address on air.
No.
But, you know, I think we can have everything sent there. And as soon as I get this, I want to get the contract. I want it in writing that we have it before we can start. You know, as soon as that happens, I'm talking it's going to be a whirlwind. But we do have the place to start. And I'm already starting on a list of people I'm contacting as soon as I can send them the proper documents.
But isn't that Mel's forte, though? Isn't that Mel's forte with the contract?
Yes, but this is with the Hard Rock. For the venue. I'm talking about for the venue. We need to make sure we have that in place before we can say, hey, look, I'm having this thing. I don't know where I'm having it, but, you know. So as soon as we have that in place and we can put it all on paper, then it's the sky's the limit. I mean, then we're going to be hitting the ground running. You're getting donated.
Yeah.
That.
Well, it's September. We do know the date, September 21st. That's a Sunday. And we do know the time. It's all there in the flyer. We have it all day. I will be in Louisiana Thursday. I go on radio. When am I going on again? I'm going on Friday, but what time am I going on? Ellen, do you know?
Rudy's looking at 8 o'clock right now.
I'm going on there at 8 o'clock. So that's when the rednecks wake up.
Okay, I'm ready. It's all good, man. It's all good.
Yeah, I'll keep you busy, but
it's all good, bro. It's all good. I got your back. You know what I mean, brother?
Okay. Thank you. I can't help it. And Robbie, I got a meal. I wonder if the Hard Rock Casino will let us cook redneck turkey burgers.
No.
All right, fine.
But
it looks
I
so
do
cute.
Have a house. I do have a house not far away with a grill. So, I mean, if it's that important to you.
It kind of is, because if you look at the picture, they made the hot dogs like little feet, and they're burnt.
I've seen the picture. I love it. I love that picture.
Isn't that cute?
I want one. I always
yeah.
have a hot dog and a hamburger at a grill anyway. Might as well have them together.
Yeah, we'll bring in the redneck.
Hey, Brian, are you bringing your girlfriend with you?
I asked her, I said, Cindy, are you going with me? She goes, where we're going? I go, Mississippi. She goes, why? I said, well, we have an event there. She goes, I said, we haven't been to the South. She goes, there's a reason for it. And I said, sweetheart, we got to go there. And she goes, I really don't want to go, but if I have to go, I'm going shopping. I go, no, you're not, because Robbie's going to be there, and Kelly's going to be there, and Ellen's going to be there. She goes, I'll sit with them, but I don't want to sit with the rest of the Southerners because they don't like us. And I agree with her.
And, if you don't come, tell her that I got your back, okay? If you don't come, tell her I got your back.
Yeah, well, she's thinking about it, and her last statement was, we'll walk like we're friends, and then when we shut the door, we'll fuck like rabbits, Southern rabbits. So she says she will do it if it's on the weekend. She cannot do it during the weekday. Now, I'm flying out Thursday, so if she does come, she'll probably come on a Saturday.
Thursday? You've got from Saturday to Friday to Thursday.
I'm flying out Thursday because I got a radio show to do Friday.
I thought you were doing that Saturday.
No.
No, that's the pool party, a ping pong tournament.
Yeah. That's Saturday. And also, Friday after I do the radio show, I want to visit the shelters and talk to some of the people, the directors and everything, and help Robbie with all the stuff that needs to be set up for the following day. Early, and then I'm sure Robbie will still be there. She'll be partying. Everybody's going to know her. So
everybody knows me anyway.
Exactly.
Hey,
so me and Robbie will be smoking the smoky smoke.
Hey, I don't admit that online on air.
Oh, okay. Well, you just did. I don't admit that online. What, we're on?
Hey, Robbie.
Yeah, my doctor thinks I quit smoking cigarettes, so there you go.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
If Brian and Cindy disappear, check the janitor closet. They'll probably be in there.
Yeah.
And that's not far from the truth. Not far. I just pictured we're up there, and Cindy will be there Saturday. Kelly, your husband's coming in, flying in Sunday. Am I correct?
I'm not certain at this point, either Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, and that would be something. Me, Cindy, Kelly and her husband, oh, my God, Ellen and Rudy, and of course, Jesse. And if you're going to bring your wife, Jesse?
No, my wife's going to stay home. She don't travel with me too much like I used to.
Okay.
When I used to wrestle, she used to travel with me all the time. And after she made her comment that I had to give it up or I lose my marriage because every time I ended up in the hospital, my kids saying, hey, is Daddy going to be able to get up and walk? So since I gave it up, 14 years of it, and the long distance travels like this, she won't be coming with me.
Okay. Okay. And then we got Robbie, and we're going to meet Mel and Mama, and probably Johnny Rock will be there. I mean, it'll be a big party, all of us together at one big table. Can you imagine that?
I know. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, boy. That's going to be something. And you get to meet Cindy. Cindy is a lovely ball buster, woman. And who adores every word I say. That's what Kelly's waiting for. No, she'll be, Cindy will just give me the eye.
Wasn't
like,
she the same one that fired you the other day?
Yeah, she did fire me, but she did it with love. She's the one, first thing she said is Robbie and Mel going to be there? I go, I hope so. She goes, good. Because do they still know who won the fantasy football thing? Do they know who's the team? Do they know who kicked their ass? I go, sweetheart, we're not going to bring that up.
Well, we are.
Yeah, she goes, I'm going to wear my jersey. Kicked your ass.
Yeah,
I go,
we'll give
okay.
her a nice little football trophy. She deserves it.
She wants a little kudos, if you don't mind. She has a word to pick with Cindy's husband. He's going, did you know that I did not get a trophy for winning the game? So she's still pinned up there, Kelly, so I'm just preparing you.
She needs a trophy. We'll give it to her.
Yeah, she's a little pinned up. So when she has a little drinky-drinky, you know, just
well, you
pretend we don't
nobody
know.
Paid to be in the fantasy football, so we had no money to buy a trophy.
Oh, she doesn't want the money. She just wants the accolades and acknowledgement
well,
that she kicked
out,
everybody.
We were going to all pay, and we didn't pay.
Yeah. Well, next year, we learn something. When we say we're going to pay, this is lesson learned. We do pay.
No, I think we should all still pay and give it to her. She won. Come on, I'll pay mine. I don't have a problem.
Wow. Oh. Well, if we raise enough money, maybe we could. Because it's hell to pay. She'll let everybody know about it when she gets a little drink. I won the football. Hey, honey, we're at the IWNA. I don't give a fuck. Honey, where's Robbie? I beat your ass.
Yes, and I'm going to give her the cash. When I see her, I will hand her the cash. So tell her if she wants to get paid, she's got to come here to get paid.
It's going to be fun. And you get to see her.
Yeah.
And you'll see the kind of woman that I spend with for a long time, and you'll realize why I'm crazy. And it's going to be fun. And you guys don't like act like animals. I know you people. Just because you're away, you think you're little rabbits, and you're going to be making noises in those rooms. Remember, the walls are pretty, you know. Just behave yourself.
That's why they have music everywhere you go. Even when you walk in your room, the rock and roll is playing on the TV. You know,
oh, my
in the hallway,
God.
The elevators. Underwater in the pool, the rock and roll is dripping from this place. It's just amazing.
Well, me and Cindy like the skinny dip, so we might be in the pool around 1 o'clock.
And did I mention that the showers that they have 3 shower heads, and it's big enough for 5 or 6 people?
This is turning into an adult hotel. I really just need one. Hey, Brian. Robbie, what are you doing in the shower? It's big enough for 5 people. What's your problem? Okay.
Well, 6 people of each one wants to share a shower head, you know.
Oh, my God. And then I hear Ellen, hey, Brian. Ellen, what are you doing in the shower? Oh, it's big enough for 6 people.
No.
Jesse.
Rudy told me, he goes, and that's why we have to find a babysitter for Aaron.
Yeah, exactly.
And Aaron is going to be pissed.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think children are allowed. I'll find that out. I'll call Lindsay. I don't think children are allowed in the venues here.
I just have this vision, Robbie. I really do. I'm taking a shower, and I'm going, Jesse, I got your back, Brian. I'm on it. What? Don't worry about it. You go ahead and shower. But Jesse, you got no clothes on. Don't worry about it. I'm blending in.
Yeah, I get by now. My God, I dropped the soap. Hold on, Brian. I'll get it for you.
This is why I'm not going into the South. All right, guys. This is how we do. This is how we shower in the South. Oh, okay, I didn't know.
We gotta save on water.
Yeah, exactly. Can we lose the banjo guy? No, he's the guy with the towels. Okay.
There's a sign in there: save water, shower with a friend, save the planet, shower with a friend.
Oh, Jesus.
I thought it was conserve water, shower with a friend.
Oh, yeah,
this is
right.
Save the planet. This is save the planet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I saw one that said conserve water, shower with a friend.
Jeez. That's going to be one hell of a shower. And knowing Robbie, well, now that we're all here, let's conduct business. What?
I've been working on this for 5 months.
I've been working on this. Yeah, excuse me while I sit down.
Or we could all just jump in the sauna and bring some.
Yeah, let's go there. Let's go that route.
Yeah, bring body wash or the swimming pool. Kick everybody
yeah.
out. It's not part of our team. Get out.
Yeah, really. Oh, my God. And then Southern people looking at it going, I don't see these people around here in them parts. Look at them people showering. I don't know. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
They have a shower out at the pool. They've got shower heads out at the pool everywhere, too. So, I mean, we can shower all together in public.
You took it to the other step, didn't you, Robbie? Casey, Robbie took it to in public.
Hey, Ron, the jackass is in the shower. Goddamn.
Yeah, right. I got dibs.
We got something wrong.
Yeah, shotgun. Yeah, they're going to kick us out. They're going to kick us out. It's only a matter of time. And we behave like animals.
All sincerely, I can't drink and smoke them certain cigarettes because my job does alcohol and certain cigarette testing.
Yeah, well, there won't be any of that going on. None of us are going to drink or smoke any cigarettes or any
right.
stuff. We're
right.
going to be professional, and we will do that in private.
Well, I'm saying that because my job that they do alcohol drug testing and all that because I'm actually becoming a truck driver.
Okay, and congratulations on that one, Jesse. Congratulations, buddy. And we will make sure, we joke, but we will make sure it's serious, and we will behave like professionals and make sure that you don't get near it. And as soon as we pull Kelly out of the hawker room, we're going to be fine. All right.
Kelly.
Hey, we're all going to meet Kelly's husband. We're going to meet the guy. We're going to meet Mr. Corbin.
White guy behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, and my girlfriend has a beef with Kelly's husband because he was the leader of the fantasy football thing, and she didn't get a virtual trophy.
She needs her trophy and her money. We need to get it to her that week.
Yeah.
Tell her she'll have it September 20th.
That's going to be funny. I can see him showering and Cindy walking in going, "Where's my money, bitch?" Cindy, that's Kelly's husband. Oh, God, this is a train accident. All right, guys.
Did you
Good
see
job,
my campaign I'm running? Did you see my campaign I'm running for the reality show?
Go ahead and pitch it, buddy. I saw it, and I shared it, but go ahead and pitch it because we're ready to leave.
Well, it's already running. I've got some funding. People ask you funding. You can go to fundme.com, the Mitchell Family Reality Network Show. It's on fundme.com. Actually, I send the link to Ellen's inbox and your inbox, too. So, and Robbie, I send it to your inbox, too, if you don't care to share it, because we're trying to raise $20,000 to get this reality show launched so we can get camera people in our house to follow us or wherever we go.
May I make a suggestion? Yes. I looked at the trailer, and it's don't take offense, but it's really kind of boring. You need to put some excitement in it to make people want to watch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's just showing your kids acting, you know, it didn't draw me in like something I would want to watch. So as a professional, I would suggest putting something in there exciting to make people want to watch.
Hey, you know what? That's a good idea. You know, Jesse, I have a suggestion. I haven't, like if you have your kids in there, if they're acting up, then cut to a part of you and your wife talking about their behavior, saying, I'm worried about the kids. You know, you got to see reality sometimes scripted because reality, and Robbie brought up a point. If you had a camera, if you had a web camera in my house, it would be the most boringest thing you ever seen. That's why I'm not on the air. Robbie says, go on the air and put the camera on you. Well, all you're going to see is just me and maybe my facial expression. I'm thinking that's the most boringest thing in the world to see. Robbie thinks it might be exciting, but so reality is boring, so that's why they write a little script in there. So I would listen to Robbie on that and maybe cut where maybe make a make-believe problem that, one of the kids that you're thinking about is, is acting up and he's crying too much. Maybe we should take him to someone to talk to. And even if it's just planned or in the script, you know what I mean, Jesse?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it needs to have something like that.
Okay.
Well, the trailer that I have on there on the fundraiser on the pledge is where we're at, Bob Evans.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trailer I got on the pledge, where we're at, Bob Evans, enjoying our time as a family, having a good family time.
There you go.
And I was talking to the host and some people I knew at Bob Evans.
Oh, okay. Well, sounds good to me. And I will share it. And Jesse's part of her team, and Robbie is doing great work. And Kelly, it sounds like your writing and your flyers and your mission statements are a hit, Kelly.
Excellent.
They are.
I'm glad I can help.
I think we should post the mission statements ASAP on.
It's on the website.
I haven't been on the computer. I've been so busy with that
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah. I'm so proud of her. It's on the website. And anybody, if you're listening to all the other nonsense and we're getting to this point, if you're still listening, go to mvponthemand.com. You'll see the mission statement. And also, it'll take you to the music where you need to go. And again, we're featuring GMO and Parker, Come On Home, tribute to Marvin Gaye. They're first up on our Tip Forward. We do have that domain, tipforward.net. That is ours. And we're going to also have an no, we didn't get the .com. We got the .net.
No,
the .com was taken.
I love the song.
Yeah, it's a great song. And everybody, please applaud Ellen. She was the first one to do the Tip Forward program. She donated $3. And she wanted to be the first one to test it out. She figures it was her duty because she's MVP. Can we at least give her a little applause, please?
Yay, yay.
No, and I have to tell everybody, it is easy. All you do is create an account and then, you know, donate whatever you can. Don't stretch yourself to donate, you know, whatever you can afford. You know, it's the thought that counts, and they appreciate it. And it really is easy. All you do is create an account, you know, your email and password, and that's all there is to
it. Account where? Like a PayPal account?
MVP.com.
Yeah.
Create an account?
What happens, she's talking about creating an account on the MVP store called The Vault. When you get to The Vault
mm-hmm.
where the songs are, you create an account. And all it requires is an email and password to create an account.
Well, unless you're a new customer, and then you have to create, you have to put in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And once you create an account, you're able to download the music. And it's all in the instructions when it takes you, because when somebody donates on their PayPal account, they donate. As soon as they donate, the PayPal will redirect them to the page in the vault where the music is, where that person you want to download the music. It'll direct you right to their page. And as soon as you get to their page in the vault, all you have to do is create your account. It's name, phone number, email, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
so right now I can download any of the songs of the people that are up on the Tip Forward program?
Exactly. You can test it out, Robbie. You can go there right now. Go to mvponthemand.com. You can just go there. That's all you have to remember.
Okay.
And it'll say music, and it'll take you right there. And there's two people who are up. GMO is up, and who's the other artist, Kelly? Is it Axis?
I'm not sure. I didn't know you had put another one up yet.
Oh, no.
Hungry Hawkins,
but he doesn't. But okay. Hungry Hawkins doesn't have it. So is GMO. So just hit GMO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, when will all of them be up where I can do it with all of them is my question.
Well, we're still waiting for them to give us their information. Kelly, who gave us the information on PayPal that they can go up?
I have Axis, Efrain, Hungry Hawkins is ready to go.
Okay, so Axis is ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got the code. I've got the code for you.
But do they
have
their...
on the website.
Do I have the code to their PayPal?
No, you told me to hold up on it.
Okay, they need to get their PayPal to me so when they donate, it goes right to them. Or Robbie needs to,
whatever.
Yeah,
I have that. That's what I'm telling you. You told me to hold on to it. You told me you weren't ready to put them up yet.
Okay, I'm ready now. Okay, let's start promoting them.
Those are the ones that I have. Now, I'll have others coming up, but those are the ones that I actually have, is Axis, Efrain's. You can put Hungry Hawkins up the same way that you did Greg's right now. And
don't you have Gypsy?
Ricky Nelson I also have.
And what about Gypsy?
I don't have her code yet. No, well, we're in the process of working on it.
Okay.
Oh, has she been contacted?
Yeah, she's on board. We just got it. She was going to send me some stuff today, and
you know the
steps involved before we can get the code. And once
I
get her the code, then she can be on there.
Okay. So what's going on right now is we're going to hit GMO, and we're going to start promoting Access tonight, saying that their music is going to drop. Today is what, Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Their music is going to drop Friday. So they'll be coming up. And Robbie is a different thing because if you go through the thing with MVP.com, if you go through all the pages, you'll see a player. And on that player is a lot of advertisement about MVP and who's coming up and musicians and stuff like this while they're listening to the music.
Okay.
So it's promotion there. And there'll
that might be a selling point for Robbie, too, on Hard Rock that they could that will have them on there as sponsors of the IWMAs if they do decide to sponsor.
Oh,
yeah,
we put them on the player. So every musician, the music that they download, will they'll be the Hard Rock Casino commercial. If they can give you a commercial, I know they have a commercial. See if they can release it to you, Robbie, because I know they have one.
All right,
and
great idea.
Their commercials will be running on our site and more people download the music so they get more
people. Yeah, both audio and visual. If they have them, Robbie, their advertising agency should be able to send them to you, but both audio and visual, because we can play the audio on the show, and visual we can put on the website.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're ready to go. So what's going on is that Access, Freakin' Me, will drop Friday. We promote GMO Hard right now, and then we also mention, you know, Friday, this hottest group called Access is going to drop this Friday, get the promotion out, and we'll start promoting them Thursday night. And I'll promote them Thursday, tomorrow, on the show that they're dropping. And, you know, and we're gonna. I wasn't ready to promote everybody until Robbie nailed it down. And Kelly knows this. We're not going to do anything until Robbie says go. Am I correct, Kelly? That's what's been holding us back. So until Robbie says go.
Yeah, I don't think at this point we should hold anything. We need to get going on all of that to get the hype going. And I'll have this nailed down this week. I will have it finished before Friday, so don't worry. We will get it done. But we are going to be at the Hard Rock. I've been here this week, and I'm convinced this is where it needs to be.
Okay. And so at least we know the place, so we're basically nailed down. So everybody, as of right now, we are confirmed, and we are nailed down. This is where we're going to hold it, September 21st. Right, everybody?
Yeah, she has blocked the dates for us. We just haven't gone through all the contracts and all the bullshit that it takes to do that. But, yes, she has blocked that weekend for us.
Sounds good. Kelly, are you excited? Kelly?
Uh-oh. I'm excited. I'm on fire.
Woo! I think Kelly's still here.
I'm on fire.
The girl's on fire. Ellen, are you excited?
Yep. It's going to be a weekend of debauchery.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, let's put that in the flyer. You want a weekend of debauchery?
Yeah.
What? I took a phone call and I come back to this.
Yeah, Ken, what?
Yeah, I'm
thinking
of a phone call.
It's a church social.
I was thinking we should. Can you hear me? All right. I was thinking we should put, instead of having, like, the VIP area, we could call that the backstage pass, you know, area, and give them backstage passes to get in and out the VIP room. I think that would be a great idea.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
and Jesse?
I'd be scared to check those passes for you. Want me to tell you, I can be scared to guard check the passes for the VIP.
Thank you. I don't want any riffraff in there.
Yeah, we need to call it something, you know, it needs to pop. We need to call it All Access. All Access.
Well, actually, if they don't have a pass, they don't get back there. That's what I'm saying. And so you have to pass the proper information, the pass on there that they actually purchased, then they have the access. But they don't have the proper information, the pass or anything, they're not getting backstage.
Actually, you guys,
what they do for rock concerts is, you know, the people that have All Access, they have platinum passes, and they have, you know, just the regular passes that allows them, you know, to certain areas, but the platinum ones, that allows them everywhere.
Okay. Also, you guys, while the show was going on, Robbie and I had talked yesterday about going through Ticketmaster to do online sales. We can actually go through Ticketmaster, and we can design rubber wristbands for different colors for different, like they suggested on there, like blue VIP wristbands and, you know, for general admission and for just the auction or just, you know, whatever event was going on, we can do different colored wristbands so that you always know which wristband's allowed in which area.
Right.
Okay.
Well, there's
okay,
only
guys.
Two areas. There's only two areas. So.
Well,
yeah,
that
yeah,
plus if people only come just maybe for the auction or something like that, you know, you just whatever they're, you know, whatever they're coming for,
sure.
You
sure.
You can, we can design those. And they're 10 cents a piece, but if you're selling a ticket for $40 to $300 a piece, 10 cents a ticket or 10 cents a wristband's not that much money to spend on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, but for us, we're going to need, you know, the badges. You know, the things that we wear around our neck.
We don't need
yeah,
no stinking badges. We don't need no stinking badges. Yeah, okay, we'll wear the badges. All right, everybody. It's going to be a hoot. It's
yeah.
going to be the party to remember. And it kind of launches off the holiday because it's September 21st, and then everybody's geared up for Halloween. So,
you know what?
Everybody,
that's actually the first day of fall.
Yeah, it's we can launch first day of fall, and that's what we'll be doing. That's what we're partying, falling. So,
are we
going to go.
Oh.
Yes, we are. We're gonna have to assign somebody to Robbie because I know she'll party like a rock star, and we're gonna have to just find her. We're gonna say, "Where's Robbie? Oh, she's crowd surfing again. Robbie, you forgot to wear your panties again. No, I didn't, Brian.
Play that song, party like a rock star.
Party like a rock star. It's gonna be really fun. There's a. You know, you guys can leave right now. There's something, and I want to bring in a psychologist Friday. Cindy's going through depression because she's realizing her baby boy just got an apartment in Lemoore, California. He's in the Navy. And her little baby boy just got it, and he's being shipped off. And it's been quiet around the house, so she's going through the empty nest. And I asked, I asked Kelly to explain what this is, because I'm a single guy, never had kids. And I said, "Well, what's wrong?" She goes, "You know, he's gone, and the house is empty." I go, "Well, you have three other kids." She goes, "You don't understand. It's the last one." And I still don't understand. And she says it's called the empty nest syndrome. Robbie, Kelly, Ellen?
Let me tell you about the empty nest syndrome. I never got that because of mine. I went, woohoo, I'm free.
Well, see, I can't, you know, I knew about the empty nest when Paul, you know, because I have a 24-year-old, and I also have Aaron, who's 11. Okay, so I kind of knew about the empty nest when Paul moved out, and it was between him and Aaron. You know, I had nobody to take care of. So,
yeah.
You kind of feel like, okay, well, who needs me now? You know, my
I'm
child's
free.
Gone.
Hello.
Well, see, I can't do that, okay? You know, I have
puppies.
I'm free. No. I don't. I'm not free for another 7 years.
Yeah.
Hey, well,
yeah.
I'm really not either. You know, I'm with you. I have a 25-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 14-year-old. So I know what you mean, but I'm free. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, because your teenagers, they can practically take care of themselves. You know, Erin tries to proclaim that she can take care of herself, okay? You know, but, okay, we know how far that gets.
I'm
yeah.
free.
But it's a free fall. But it's
I'm
a real.
Free.
But she's going through. She's hitting it hard, and some women go into a huge depression. I don't think Kelly, as much as I know Kelly, and she was nice enough to invite me into her family life since we've been friends for such a long time, and I know how close she is to her boys. I don't think she's going to be able to handle it. Can you handle the emptiness? You had it a little bit with Kyle because he went to college, but you still.
Oh
had
yeah, I hated
one.
It. I hated
yeah.
it. Yeah, I still had the other one, but I hated it. And I'm not looking forward to it again. It's going to happen again
yeah.
soon. And it's I don't. I'm not one that is ready to push them out. I know my friends, my closest friends here, whenever their son went into the Air Force, they were just so thrilled. It was like, yay, he's out and he's going to be on his own. And we've got this room now. And, you know, they were happy. And it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
I can't be that way.
He's not home running around, and she's used to him having him running around the house. He's not there. He's somewhere else out there in the world, and she's what is the best for him and the safety for him, but she's misses him being running around the house.
I mean, and, you know, and Rudy's freaking out, you know, because Aaron's 11. She just turned 11. You know, and
won't be long.
That's what's, you know, and she's a girl too. Okay, it's a little bit different with boys.
Sure.
And you know, when she moves out, you know, that's daddy's little girl. Okay.
And, you know, you bring up a good point, and you women don't understand this. Let me go this side, and you bring up an excellent point, and I think probably Jesse could relate to it. Imagine you have a little girl, and the only man that she's been looking up to is the father and count on, and all of a sudden she brings home some jackass that that she looks at the same way she used to look at you, and she wants
to
spend time.
Well, I think it's the same way for father and daughter as mother and son. I think it's the same connection.
Yeah.
I think there's a different connection than they have with their other parent of the same sex.
Yeah. Oh,
really? And so if he brings home a girl, you're going, bitch! I mean, do you have
that?
Yeah,
you're sizing them up, and you're going, You
know,
really?
And
you start comparing
them
to people that you grew up with or whatever, and you think, wow, she's turning out just like this girl. I remember that girl in school. You know, you do.
I
think that's just a thing.
Yeah.
My mother used to say to me, go ahead, Ellen. My mother used to say that when Paul brought me home.
Yeah.
My mother used to say that to me. I go, Mom, I want you to meet so-and-so. And she goes, no, honey, I don't want to meet so-and-so. I go, why? Because you only bring home whores. I go, Mom. And so this went on to my adult life, and she didn't approve of anybody. And then Cindy came. I go, Mom, I want you to meet her. And she goes, well, where is she from? I said, Oregon. She goes, they eat trees. I go, no, Mom, she doesn't eat a tree. She's how long? I go, you know, I talked about her. I want you to meet her. Why? She's a whore. She's not a whore. So she met Cindy. She goes, I love her. She's a nice girl. What happened to you? And it's like, well, why? I can pick nice girls. She goes, no, you can't. You pick whores. I go, okay. But I didn't tell her how she acted in bed. Oh, you're right, mother. But I figured that women have that. You're right. So I want to bring in a psychologist Friday to talk about the emptiness, because that's a real depression that people, I didn't realize that women go through. It's a real depression about the emptiness, and a lot of people cannot handle it. So I think that's a right topic to talk about.
Yeah, and see, on the other end of it, you know, a lot of women, they go through the postpartum depression too.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one end, and, you know, emptiness is the other.
Okay, so maybe there's a PST, the post-traumatic stress thing on when emptiness. That's an interesting theory, that you're going through post-traumatic stress. There's nobody in the house anymore. Your kids are grown. They don't need you anymore, like Ellen's saying. Couldn't that be a part of post-traumatic stress?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
interesting.
Really?
Lost my dad and her mother, who she's taken care of for the last 50 years, both of them. Both of them died within a year, and she's at home alone, nobody to take care of, and she's just lost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But
she's not right.
But still, it really hit her hard. And it wasn't her children, it was her husband and her mother, but she still had the empty net.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you're taking care of somebody and you've been taking care of them for a long time, then, you know, it doesn't matter if it's your children, if it's your elderly parents, if it's your grandparents, anybody. You know, as soon as they leave or they're gone, you know, you don't know what to do with yourself.
Right.
Well, let's bring Morgan Lawrence in Friday. It's that. I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there who are